spin to the right, then spin to the right, then spin to the right again. Then you spin clockwise, spin to the starboard, spin to the right, and then you move a little bit abrupter. You're our nation's finest interrupter. Yours is the last word and first word. All the words in between and a rude outburst word.
Shut up!
I put the bull in bully.
Oh, really?
No, O'Reilly.
Oh!
So you spin to the right, then spin to the right, then spin to the right again. Then you spin clockwise, spin to the starboard, spin to the right, and then I've more makeup on than any actor. So my friends are calling me Max Factor. Get it? Though I've never been in the service, when it comes to spin, I'm a whirling dervish.
Those who trespass...
Oh, really?
No, O'Reilly.
Oh!
Oh, you spin to the right...
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. John Kerry says President Bush has a January surprise plan to privatize Social Security should Bush win another term. Bush was quoted in New York Times Magazine telling his supporters privatizing Social Security will be high on his agenda. The Bush campaign denies it.
The recent recession has created a massive wealth gap between white families and black and Hispanics. The study, released on Monday by the Pew Hispanic Center, says that white households had a median net worth greater than $88,000 in 2002. That's 11 times more than Hispanics and 14 times more than blacks. Nearly one-third of black families and 26% of Hispanic families were in debt or had no assets. That's compared to 11% of white families. According to Robert Sudo, director of the center, accumulation of wealth allows low-income families to rise in to the middle class. He added that Hispanics made some gains in terms of employment in lower paid and lower skilled areas. Blacks were hit hardest by job loss during the recession, finding themselves victims of last hired, first fired policies.
A German auto workers' strike stretches into its sixth day as union members at a GM Opel plant are refusing to accept plans to cut 12,000 jobs in Europe. Franco Biagiotti is an Opel employee.
We have no other choice, or rather, the colleagues have no other choice. Their backs are against the wall. You have to imagine, on Thursday, they were told, listen, next year your position will be gone. The job and the plant will be sold.
The plant's production of Astra compact cars and Zafira minivans was brought to a standstill, and automotive manufacturing giant General Motors is urging workers to call off their strike, saying compulsory layoffs are necessary to remain competitive. GM's European division hasn't made a profit in 4 years, losing $161 million in the first half of 2004.
The world's only unionized Walmart may soon see its doors closed. The world's biggest retailer is threatening to close its store in Jonquière, Quebec, if the employees do not accept its contract proposal. Walmart said delays in contract negotiations are making the store increasingly unprofitable. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union argues that's the company that caused delays by trying to usurp the employees' decision to unionize. The union says the company recently opened a second Walmart less than 30 miles from the Jonquière store, which could be drawing away some clients. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. One in four working families in the United States are considered low income or poor. That's according to an independent report. Included in that number is 20 million children. Using data from the 2002 census, the report found that 9.2 million families with at least one working adult and one child fall into the government's measure of low income. That means they earn less than the federal poverty level of less than $37,000. 2.5 million of those families earn less than $18,000 a year.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Here's a new political slogan with some integrity and democratic gravitas to it. Let's run government like a government. This is, of course, the opposite of the tired, old, tried, and failed slogan that politicians of both parties have been pushing for years. We'll run government like a business. The Clintonites used this in the 90s with their Reinventing Government campaign, declaring that government agencies should become efficient business operations and treat people as customers. Oh? Efficient like what? The mammoth insurance company bureaucracies, or maybe the military contractors who waste and defraud us of billions of our tax dollars? And do they mean customer treatment like we get from don't-give-a-damn banks and telephone companies? Today, we have a fully corporatized White House run by former CEOs, including Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and company. They're literally running government through such standard corporate practices as operating in secret, twisting tax laws to benefit the elite, opposing public disclosure and right-to-know laws, shutting out dissenters and dissing dissent itself, rigging the regulatory rules for corporate gain, stomping on labor, running roughshod over the environment, disempowering consumers, and using advertising gimmicks to hide their deceits. It's time to get real. Government is not a business, and we are not customers. We're citizens. Far from being passive consumers of governmental policies, we're the sovereign powers who can make or unmake those policies. Corporations, by their very nature, are exclusive private empires that exist to serve the bottom line of the wealthiest investors, including the CEOs. Everyone and everything else be damned. That's no model for a democracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, America's founders knew that corporate power was anathema to the public interest and to the democratic will of the people. So they created a framework to run government like a government. It's time to put those democratic principles into action again.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at whiterosesociety.org and tomhartman.com. Drop into our chat room at tomhartman.com if you'd like. Already well-populated, full of some of the wisest minds on the entire Internet. Live discussion while we're on the air. You know, back after, during the debates, after the second debate, and then in particular after the third debate, and by the way, our phone number 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. But first, I want to bring in Dr. Justin Frank, because after the second and third debate, some fascinating stuff going on. I was noticing that there just seemed to be a tremendous change in affect in George Bush, in his external appearance, the way he behaved, the way he projected himself, and even apparently in the way he was thinking from the first debate to the second debate. The first debate, and I raised on this program the possibility that maybe he was on pharmaceuticals and that they were adjusting his meds or something like that, and all these conservatives called up and said, oh, you're just being partisan, and maybe. No, I didn't mean this as some kind of, you know, partisan attack. I mean, this is a legitimate concern, I think. So Justin Frank, Justin A. Frank, M.D.,
is a psychiatrist, clinical professor in the Department of Psychiatry at George Washington University Medical Center. He's actually studied George W. Bush at length to the point that he wrote a book about him called Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. Dr. Frank, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here. It's very good to be here.
I'm pleased you could make it. And now, my first take on this was that in the first debate, Bush almost looked like, well, not almost, Bush looked to me like somebody who is on an SSRI drug, on a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, the Prozac, Wellbutrin family, you know, the kind of dazed look, the relative flatness. In the second debate, he was gritting his teeth constantly. He was leaping up from tables. It looked to me like he was on Ritalin, you know, or stimulants or something. And then there's, you know, these problems with cognition that he has, that of thinking and memory retrieval that are quite different from his debates with Al Gore and with Ann Richards. And I was wondering if that might just indicate something perhaps even more benign, that perhaps he'd been taking benzodiazepine-based sleeping drugs to get to sleep at night to deal with the anxiety, and they were inhibiting REM sleep and screwing up his memory. What do you think about this? Is this crazy?
Well, I'm actually struck by how different he was in each debate from the previous debate. And I agree with that part of that observation. There's no question about it. I think that in the first debate, however, he was very anxious because of something that Kerry said to him. Namely, it happened right after Kerry said that your father opposed going into Baghdad and predicted this exact scenario.
Right. In fact, he quoted from...
That was when he started to unravel. He became unable to think.
He quoted... Kerry quoted from Bush Sr.'s book in
which
he said, we didn't go into Baghdad because we would have been stuck in a protracted situation with no exit strategy and...
So I think that what happened there is that Kerry made Bush extremely anxious. And part of it has to do with the fact that his entire... unconscious, at least, method in his one of his main goals in life is to destroy his father, not just to be better than him. And I think that whenever anybody mentions, and I wrote about that in my book in the chapter called Oedipus Rex, spelled W-R-E-C-K-S, that he essentially is out to destroy his father. And that's why he wouldn't even let him speak. Even after the book was written, he still keeps doing this. He wouldn't let him speak at the Republican convention, his own father, who was president and vice president.
Yeah, and
that's
and,
striking.
Yeah, and now why... So you're
when Kerry brought up how good his father was and how smart his father was, that unnerved Bush completely, and for the rest of the session, or what is like a session, he kept talking about hard work and all this stuff. It was hard work loving people. It's hard work paying attention. So he became very anxious. And what people do who have been substance abusers and ex-alcoholics is that they do what's called perseveration. They find a particular phrase to cling to like a life raft to help them think, to help them give them time to think, to help manage their anxiety. And that's what he started doing with the term hard work.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that normally Bush, even when he was a child, used to discharge anxiety by being hyperactive and running around. And he was stuck behind a podium, so he had no way to get rid of his anxiety. He had no way to manage it, and it interfered with his ability to think and function. And that's why he looked, really, I thought he looked terrible. He looked trapped. He was hesitant, testy. He was really not making a lot of sense sometimes. And he was like a child at one point, saying, yes, I know who Saddam, the difference between Saddam Hussein is and Osama bin Laden. It was striking. And then in the second debate,
Before we move on, though, so you're suggesting then that you think that the problem that he had, let's say, in the first debate, probably didn't have anything to do with medication. It had more to do with a deep-seated psychological trauma.
Yeah, see, this
trauma.
Is a man who has spent his entire life trying to manage anxiety, no matter what. That's why he uses faith. Faith is not as an expression, or his certainty is not an expression of faith. It's a defense against anxiety. And people who have non-defensive faith, or genuine faith, for instance, are open to new ideas. They're not closed. He uses it to block thought. He uses it to protect himself because he's always been anxious. He's always had trouble paying attention. He's been a heavy substance abuser, probably cocaine and definitely lots of alcohol. Yeah. He's had a long history of being rescued by other people. There was nobody there to rescue him.
So,
and I think he completely collapsed in the first debate.
So his faith, his certainty in his faith, isn't so much a certainty in his faith as it is an aggressive effort to hold off uncertainty.
Yes.
Which is really a kind of an anti-faith. It's
yes.
It's the antithesis, really, of faith.
A desperate use of faith to calm him without having without any thought involved. In other words, it's a way, it's a defense against having to work, having to think, having to manage, and that it that so when somebody cuts through all of that denial, like Kerry did in the first debate, he collapses. I thought he collapsed in that first debate. I was really shocked.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to go crazy.
Yeah, it certainly was a little scary to think this guy's president of the United States.
Yeah, it's not that he's not only that he's president, but even if he loses, it was scary about what he's going to do between now and January.
Yeah. Now,
even if he loses, he looked extremely unstable. He's not fit to be president. Really, it's so amazing that the title of unfit to command or whatever it is about the book about Kerry, it should be really about Bush. I mean, he really is not capable.
Right.
The second debate, though, was one in which he was allowed one thing that he wasn't allowed in the first debate, namely motoric discharge for his anxiety.
The ability
to
move around.
That's why he kept jumping up and down. That's why he kept interrupting. That's why he was clenching his fist and getting so angry, because he had a chance to actually discharge his anxiety. Kerry still kept pressure on him, and he kept interrupting. And he didn't really understand some of the questions. So like that thing about the lumber, remember when he stood up and said,
want to buy some wood?
Buy some wood. Now, I thought, is that, several people have said to me, that's an old slang, fraternity slang for having an erection and wanting to telling people that he's ready for sex.
Hmm.
I don't know if that's true or not, but if it is, nobody said anything about it. Yeah. But I was curious if any of your callers have heard that phrase. You know, I've got some wood. Anybody want to buy some wood?
Well, there's, you know, the referring to an erection as a woody is an old thing. But
as a woody.
Know, yeah.
Well, anyway, it was interesting to me. But the main thing was, if it were that unconsciously, it would really fit with this idea about this feeling unmanned and emasculated by Kerry, and feeling that Kerry is just stronger and steady and was fairly unflappable in the second debate. And he reverted to a kind of, in the third debate, into a kind of mocking behavior. Mm-hmm. The thing that was striking about the third debate was, again, he was stuck behind a podium. So I think if there was any possibility of his having been medicated, it would be in the third debate.
Yeah.
Because he had this kind of smile pasted on his face in the first half of the debate. He had a little spittle in the corner of his mouth that was extremely distracting, which can go along with the dry mouth that's secondary usually to amphetamines that would be overused to keep him from being able to pay attention and keep from being too anxious.
Or methylphenidate or Ritalin.
Yeah, for methylphenidate or from Dexedrine that would be prescribed. But there's no evidence for that other than that those are things that are observing. But he did, you know, cackle and laugh inappropriately, and he told bad jokes, I thought. And he tried to mock Senator Kerry in a way that was quite unpresidential, to say the least.
Yeah.
So I feel that there's this history of, in all three debates, I think what we saw are massively different attempts to manage anxiety. The first one, he really failed. I mean, he just got so anxious that he couldn't think, and he became perseverating. In the second one, he tried to manage his anxiety by jumping up and down and interrupting and getting very excited and using the town hall format that he uses in his own campaign situations. And the third one was an attempt to manage it by cackling, mocking, and then trying to just appear calm with this smile as if he's really listening to what Kerry said. But whenever he was asked a question, he would then retreat to a question he couldn't answer, he would retreat to using the No Child Left Behind argument in the
right.
third debate, which again
right.
is a retreat from thinking.
So his inconsistency was actually revealing an underlying consistency, and that was
yes.
that he's suffering from an anxiety disorder, which
yes.
is a part of a larger set of personality disorders.
Yes, he has an anxiety disorder, and he has trouble thinking, and what happens is he dissociates at times and disconnects.
Right. We're talking with Dr. Justin Frank, a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, clinical professor in the Department of Psychiatry at George Washington University Medical Center, who an expert on George Bush, written Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President, an excellent book. I'd like to bring in a caller, if it's all right with you, Dr.
Sure.
Dr. Frank. We have Dave in Humboldt County. Dave, as I recall, is a retired psychologist. Dave?
Oh. Great.
Psychologist and Dr. Franks, I think it's wonderful that you've taken the time to do this for the country, because somebody really has to take a look at a very disturbed personality.
Thank
I'm
you.
Of the observation that George Bush is a part of a severely characterologically disordered group. It goes back to the days of PNAC. It goes back to...
the Nixon administration, in a way. I mean, you know, most of these guys.
Yes, he's part of a group of people, but what's your point is...
Yeah, well, let's come back to that. We've got to take a break here. I'm sorry, Dr. Frank
I'm sorry.
And Dave.
I want to hear.
The tyranny of the clock. If we can all just hold for a few moments,
sure.
We'll let Dave reset the question and let Dr. Frank give us an answer here. I'm curious about this as well. 20 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Talk about unsanitary. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums or wear a dust mask. Imagine vacuuming your house wearing a dust mask? Friends, try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. It's 99.99% dust-free. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month of $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I ain't lived forever, but I've lived enough.
And, well, I've lived enough to know somebody acting weird when I see it, and that's certainly been the case with George W. Bush in these debates, our opportunities to see him unscripted. We're talking with Dr. Justin Frank, M.D., a psychiatrist, clinical professor in the Department of Psychiatry at George Washington University Medical Center, author of the book Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. And Dr. Frank, Dave in Humboldt County, California, was on the line, our retired psychologist, regular listener, who was... I think, Dave, what you were saying was that you think that Bush's part has brought in a whole group of psychologically disordered folks. My point was that most of them actually served in the Nixon administration, and your point was that they created the Project for a New American Century and are trying to inflict their psychopathology on the rest of us. Am I putting words in your mouth, or is that a good summary?
It's close. It's close. I think that my observation, I think much of America sees well-meaning Christian bumbling oafs in the White House. I think that Bush was more selected by the PNAC crowd to be their man in the White House as opposed to the reverse. But I'm seeing, one, a great deal of empirical evidence, Dr. Frank, that the events of 9/11 never could have happened unless the White House agreed to it. Wanted it to happen, needing an excuse to invade Iraq. Now, this is a psychopathic pathology, but it's empirically, I'm overwhelmed with evidence and a couple of books here that I've been studying.
So what are your thoughts on that, Dr. Frank?
Well, I do think that there is certainly some historical precedent for this kind of thing. There's certainly historical concepts of dirty tricks, which would be the most severe dirty trick ever perpetrated if that were the case.
Well, I mean, there's still people
at least
who...
on this country, but I think that there is a way to think about that empirically. My feeling right now is that I'm much more interested in actually talking about what we see in Bush himself, which is a person who is unable to think and not competent. I think that, or to be president, I do think that he is extremely suspicious and paranoid, extremely compromised by massive anxiety, and I do think that he, that there's a lot of evidence that he was certainly chosen by the right, as you say, but at the same time, and he uses religion in an amazingly destructive way that I think you're right, that most people don't pick up on. And even in the article in the New York Times on Sunday by Ron Suskind, I don't know if you read that, about faith.
Yeah, I
even
read it.
Even he talks about it as the enemy of thought and the enemy of reality, but he doesn't talk about the motive for the faith. And I think the motive has to do with avoiding thought and avoiding anxiety and using it as a kind of a shield and a weapon.
Yeah, and this is not to indict faith, because
that's right.
Exactly. This is not typical of the average person.
Most people have faith as a way of expanding themselves and thinking and being connected and looking for truth about themselves. He looks on faith as a way of blocking out any questions or any thought.
Now, to what extent do you think that the paranoia and anxiety disorders are... First of all, two quick questions come to mind. Number one, to what extent do you think that Dick Cheney shares these? And number two, would this account for, certainly seems like it would, those 7 agonizing minutes in Florida on 9/11 when he continued to read My Pet Goat? And then when he got on the plane
first.
And then flew from city to city all over the United States like Little Boy Lost...
The second question first, and that is that he.
And we've got about a minute left. I'm sorry.
He's able to disconnect because that's one of the ways he has of managing anxiety. The picture of him from the Michael Moore movie was of a person who was extremely anxious. He almost looked like somebody who was brain dead, like the pictures of that woman in Florida in the coma, where he was blinking his eyes rapidly. I felt there was nothing going on inside of his brain, that he was pretty much paralyzed, and I think that's why he flew around. The second thing is that, as far as the other question goes about Dick Cheney, I do think that Dick Cheney is also very suspicious, but Dick Cheney is much more malevolent and manipulative than Bush. Bush is much more anxiety-driven than Cheney is. Cheney is really like good cop, bad cop. You know, he's like his hired hand, killer type.
Yeah, so Cheney's the Darth Vader, and Bush is more classroom bully variety.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Dr. Justin Frank, MD, clinical professor, Department of Psychiatry at George Washington University Medical Center, author of the book Bush on the Couch, Inside the Mind of the President. Dr. Frank, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Pleasure to have you on here. It's 29 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. A consumer alert was recently reported in a leading consumer testing magazine. It warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. I would never make a bagless vacuum because they're filthy. My 8-pound Oric XL is hypoallergenic. Try one free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. You'll breathe easier knowing it's an Oric XL.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. John Kerry says President Bush has a January surprise plan to privatize Social Security should Bush win another term. Bush was quoted in New York Times Magazine telling his supporters privatizing Social Security will be high on his agenda. The Bush campaign denies it.
The recent recession has created a massive wealth gap between white families and black and Hispanics. The study, released on Monday by the Pew Hispanic Center, says that white households had a median net worth greater than $88,000 in 2002. That's 11 times more than Hispanics and 14 times more than blacks. Nearly one-third of black families and 26% of Hispanic families were in debt or had no assets, as compared to 11% of white families. According to Robert Sudo, director of the center, accumulation of wealth allows low-income families to rise into the middle class. He added that Hispanics made some gains in terms of employment in lower paid and lower skilled areas. Blacks were hit hardest by job loss during the recession, finding themselves victims of last hired, first fired policies.
A German auto workers' strike stretches into its sixth day as union members at a GM Opel plant are refusing to accept plans to cut 12,000 jobs in Europe. Franco Biagiotti is an Opel employee.
We have no other choice, or rather, the colleagues have no other choice. Their backs are against the wall. You have to imagine, on Thursday, they were told, listen, next year your position will be gone. The job and the plant will be sold.
The plant's production of Astra compact cars and Zafira minivans was brought to a standstill, and automotive manufacturing giant General Motors is urging workers to call off their strike, saying compulsory layoffs are necessary to remain competitive. GM's European division hasn't made a profit in 4 years, losing $161 million in the first half of 2004.
The world's only unionized Walmart may soon see its doors closed. The world's biggest retailer is threatening to close its store in Jonquière, Quebec, if the employees do not accept its contract proposal. Walmart said delays in contract negotiations are making the store increasingly unprofitable. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union argues that's the company that caused delays by trying to usurp the employees' decision to unionize. The union says the company recently opened a second Walmart less than 30 miles from the Jonquière store, which could be drawing away some clients. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. One in four working families in the United States are considered low income or poor. That's according to an independent report. Included in that number is 20 million children. Using data from the 2002 census, the report found that 9.2 million families with at least one working adult and one child fall into the government's measure of low income. That means they earn less than the federal poverty level of less than $37,000. 2.5 million of those families earn less than $18,000 a year.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Fresh back from psychoanalyzing the president. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Well, hot news from Andy Borowitz from the BorowitzReport.com. Fox News personality Bill O'Reilly announced today that he has outsourced all of his phone sex activities to India, citing heavy call volume as the reason behind the move. Starting this week, all phone sex normally handled by Mr. O'Reilly will instead originate from a call center in Bangalore, the television host confirmed. Mr. O'Reilly told his television audience last night, "There's a time and place for everything, and when it comes to phone sex, the time is any time, but the place is Bangalore." At the Bangalore call center, Surjit Kira, 31, was one of many employees undergoing a three-week training program to help him approximate Mr. O'Reilly's phone sex technique. "It is very hard to be as sexy as Bill Riley, but I am endeavoring to do so," he said. Additionally, an automated sex bot will start calling random U.S. phone numbers from Bangalore using Mr. O'Reilly's recorded voice to guide the listener through a series of automated prompts. "Press 1 if you would like to hear how fast I can get a couple of glasses of wine into you," the sex bot purrs. "Press 2 if you would like to hear about the naughty fun we'll have in the tub." Partially in response to the heavier-than-usual call volume, the Federal Communications Commission announced today that it would establish a new do-not-call list specifically for consumers who are grossed out by the idea of Mr. O'Reilly calling them. That from Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Al Gore speaking rather forcibly yesterday in Ohio, as I recall he was, series of policy addresses. He kind of wrapped the thing up, saying that in virtually every case, the president has chosen to ignore and indeed often to suppress studies, reports, information, facts that were directly contrary to the false impressions he was in the process of giving the American people. He went on to point out that Bush is, quote, arrogantly out of touch with reality. He refuses to ever admit mistakes, which means that so long as he is our president, we are doomed to repeat his mistakes. It is beyond incompetence. It is recklessness that risks the safety and security of the American people. Scary times we live in, my friends. Strange times, scary times. We must get politically active and do something about this. November 2nd is just 14 days away. And in most states, it's now too late to register to vote. But it's not too late to be contacting people and saying, "Hey, do you have a ride to the polls? Do you know where your polls are, where it is that you can buy? Have you checked to make sure that you are registered, that your registration is valid, that your state hasn't somehow discovered that a felon of a name similar to yours in Texas exists and therefore removed you from the voting rolls, things like that. Particularly if you live in an African American community, we know this has happened in Florida. Those people are still off the rolls, by and large, and apparently it's happening in Ohio as well now. 24 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Let's take a few calls here. David in Columbus, Ohio, on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, good to talk to you again.
Thank you. What's up?
Hey, I'm sorry I missed your guest there, but I wanted to ask him a couple of questions. Maybe you can help me with this.
I'll do my best.
From what I understand, I've heard him briefly on another program, or maybe it was your program at an earlier time. But help me with this if I'm correct on this or not, but he hasn't ever actually interviewed the president, has he?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, so it seems from the way he portrays the president, that he has got a a biased opinion, and then he, since he's never actually interviewed or actually had the president on the couch, how does he make any kind of real assessment other than that he's using his name and his experience, or not his experience, but his title to say that what he's saying is absolutely correct?
David, there's a huge, long history of public figures being psychoanalyzed. I mean,
yeah.
this is nothing new. In fact, if anything, this is very common. The psychopathologies of historical figures is something that you study in college when you're studying psychotherapy. And none of them were ever analyzed by a psychotherapist. The fact of the matter is, when you get somebody who is clearly in the public eye, who has a long and public record, and you see them behaving in a variety of situations, it's not
right.
particularly difficult to make a
quick
assessment.
The thing is, he's trying to portray that he knows the president's thought and how his mind works when he doesn't. He's biased, and he's making that very clear during that interview.
Yeah. Okay. Got it, David. Thank you for the call. And, I can't disagree with you to say that, the guy doesn't have his point of view, but... he's entitled to it, in my opinion.
I just want to make that clear.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep. 1-866-889-8894. Sean in Massachusetts. Hey, Sean, where in Massachusetts are you?
Coming into Worcester.
That's Worcester, actually, or Worcester.
Worcester. Yeah, I knew I was pronouncing it wrong.
There you go. Yeah. So, what's up?
Well, I liked your guest. I've heard him before. I would like to hear him talk about the American voter. The 35% or 40% on each side that doesn't change no matter what, especially the Republicans or conservatives.
Yeah, or especially the Democrats and liberals. I mean, it's one of the reasons that on this program I try to drill deep into issues as often as possible rather than just skipping around on the surface, because I think that if people don't understand the philosophical underpinnings of their political philosophy and the history of it, then it's just sports. It's just baseball. And
yeah, it is. I like chewing on that type of stuff, origins and pathology and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. Yeah, Justin Frank, I think, does a pretty good job. His book is very provocative. In his book, Bush on the Couch, he goes out of his way to explain that he's not Bush's psychiatrist and points out the long history of being able to, of psychology and as a matter of fact, let me put on my psychotherapist hat, which is the bottom of the psychological food chain. Dr. Frank is at the top of the food chain. He's a psychiatrist. You can very often get a more accurate assessment of somebody by doing in-depth biographical research and observing them over a wide variety of situations than you can actually sitting with them at a desk asking them questions. And the reason why is because...
Maybe.
Well, exactly. The reason why is because when you're sitting one-on-one with people, their first instinct is always to tell you what they think you want them to say, in other words, what they want you to hear, or B, to be on the defensive. You know, hey, this guy's trying to shrink me. He's trying to figure me out. You know, so you don't... I mean, one of the most strategic and frankly difficult parts of doing psychoanalysis is filtering out the BS, is filtering out the lies, is filtering out the stuff that's there to protect, the defensive mechanism stuff. And when you're observing somebody externally, none of that is there. Sometimes it's actually easier to make a relatively accurate diagnosis of somebody by observing them secondhand, than it is, particularly close friends and family members, things like that, but even public figures, than it is in the office. Anyhow, Sean, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Wait a minute. Are
sure.
you there?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, that's not why I called, actually.
Okay. Why'd you call?
I know that you do some investigative reporting or have called from time to time. I've got the judge's number, Adair, from Las Vegas, Nevada, that ruled on the voter fraud from that guy, Sprawl or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't.
The one that ripped up the ballots in Nevada, like Arizona and places like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyways, I was just going to give them to your producer, but...
Okay. Let me put you on hold, and Ira will get that number from you. Okay?
Sounds good.
That would be interesting. Hang on just a second, Sean. Ira, take Shawnee's on line two there. Bill in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Great guest. I really enjoyed that. I got a chance to meet you when you were in Barnes & Noble a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Enjoyed that. A couple things. I am very, very encouraged. I just read an internet site. We talked about the different, how the different newspapers in the country and their endorsements of Kerry and Bush.
Yeah.
Substantially for Kerry, but what I find really interesting is that they also showed which candidates those newspapers endorsed in 2000,
mm-hmm.
Bush or Gore. Every, not one that endorsed Gore in 2000 has endorsed Bush. Yet
right.
several who endorsed Bush in 2000 have switched over. In other words, there are newspapers that are changing colors. In the Tampa Tribune, a bastion of conservative newspaper down in Florida, they haven't endorsed Kerry, but they have refused to endorse either one, and their refusal to endorse Bush. They've never not endorsed a Republican candidate, which is just significant.
Yeah, what you're identifying, Bill, is that true conservatives, people who really actually believe in the principles that Barry Goldwater articulated, the principles that Everett Dirksen stood for and filibustered over, the principles that Russell Kirk laid out in his 1954 book, The Conservative Mind, or that William F. Buckley talked about, the true conservatives who believe that conservative means conservation, it means protecting and holding on to the resources and assets that we have, means a strong national defense, it means a balanced budget, it means not involving yourself in foreign adventures unless they come here for, you know, unless we're under attack, being very, very careful and thoughtful before participating, that Bush is not, the true conservatives are looking at Bush and saying, this guy's not a conservative. He's a radical. He's an extremist.
Second and final point, William Milliken, longtime governor of the state of Michigan, Republican,
sure.
a moderate Republican, highly respected, has endorsed John Kerry in today's Free Press, which is big news in the state of Michigan.
Amazing. Bill Milliken. That's remarkable. Yeah, well, see, he's an old line conservative. He's a true conservative. Bill, thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Casey in Texas is on the line. Hey, Casey, what's up?
Hey, I was just wanting to comment that caller was calling about the doctor never meeting president.
Yeah.
Making his opinion. Well, you know, that's exactly why Bush and Cheney shouldn't have them town hall meetings where you have to swear your allegiance to him. We'd like to meet the guy, but he won't let us.
There you go. As a matter of fact, yeah, you absolutely pointed out. I mean, he's the bubble boy.
Yeah, he's hiding his sickness from everybody that way.
Yeah. And
because the real people would get up there, even that guy that called you, if he ever met him. You know, he's probably just a poor sap like me that has to work for a living. But, you know, if we can't meet the guy, how are we ever going to really make our true decisions?
Yeah, now, Casey, if you were confronted with a situation where they said you can meet the president, but you have to sign this loyalty oath that says, A, that you're going to vote for him, B, that you endorse him, and C, that we can use your name in a newspaper advertisement, which is what the loyalty oaths say if you're going to go in and be part of the adoring crowds that greet the president and vice president, would you sign that?
No, I couldn't do it.
You couldn't do it. Yeah, see, that's the problem. People on the left tend to be people of conscience. And not that there aren't people of conscience on the right. There's many of them, but, you know, it's...
Isn't signing that loyalty oath kind of breaking the Constitution right there?
Well, it's certainly spitting in the face of the founders of this nation, in my opinion.
Yeah, because that's how I see it, you know. And I wanted to make one more comment. Me and my wife has really enjoyed your book on What Would Jefferson Do.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. But there's another thing.
Sure.
Have y'all been watching Kerry and his actions? And when y'all do your analyzing of them, have y'all done Kerry?
I haven't. You know, I don't see in Kerry the really obvious personality disorders, frankly. I mean, you know, he's got a few nervous habits. He licks his lips.
I think we ought to hear that, too, though, you know?
Yeah, no, I'd be perfectly willing to see some sort of a psychological profile of Kerry done by somebody of the stature of you know, a professor of psychiatry like Dr. Franks.
Yeah, who was that doctor was on? I didn't catch his name.
His name was Justin Franks. He's a professor of psychiatry at George Washington University Medical School in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, he sounds like a great man.
Yeah, he's a famous shrink, let's say, so.
That's a good deal.
Yeah.
Doesn't
mean he's right.
I'd like to hear him do it on Kerry just to see what, you know, so I can hear another opinion on Kerry.
Yeah. Well, I'll keep my eyes open
all
for
right.
it. Okay. Thanks
Thank
a lot, Casey. Thanks for the call. Do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. New earnings data shows that the Bush economy stinks for working Americans. These new numbers just came out. Literally. Today, Tuesday, October 19th, 14 days to the election, 488 days since Joe Wilson's wife was outed, 716 days since we began the search for weapons of mass destruction, 793 days since the anthrax attack, which presaged, and some would say guaranteed, the passage of the Patriot Act, and 1,143 days since the attacks of 9/11. Here we are today. The middle class just can't get ahead. Today's real earnings report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that for the month of September, which is the most recent month for which we have statistics, real wages for American workers were stagnant, while wages increased 0.2% for goods. Get that? Wages in wages. Everything from groceries to gas increased 0.2%. Where do working families stand this year? For the 9 months so far this year, real earnings have gone down during five of the months, have increased during three of the months, and this month remains stagnant. That's a net loss of worker income for 2004. These statistics from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. It is the conservative economic agenda, my friends, just laid right out in front of you. Steal from the poor and give to the rich. You can just boil it right down to that. You want to call it class warfare? Fine. They declared it. They're winning it. I'm going to identify it. Don in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Don, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir.
What's up?
You have to pardon me. I'm a little nervous. I don't I think it's maybe the first or second talk show I've ever called.
That's okay, Don. It's just you and me here.
What's that?
It's just you and me here. What's up?
Okay. That doctor you had on there, I was pretty stunned when he brought up that thing about the wood in that second debate there, because I saw the second debate, and John Kerry had brought up something about that Bush had received a tax credit from a lumber company he owned.
Yeah.
And George Bush said when he got his turn to stand up, he stood up and he said, I own a lumber company. But, you know, he said, basically what he was saying is, I do not own a lumber company. It's news to me that I own a lumber company. Would anybody like to buy some wood? You know, if I own a lumber company, you want to buy some wood.
I thought it was just a joke. You know, if that's your point, Don, I agree with you. Because I think that Dr. Frank was reading more into it than is there. But that's what shrimps do for a living.
Yeah.
I don't think it was some sort of deep-seated psychological sexual reference. I think George was trying to be funny. And I thought he was fairly funny, if it wasn't for the fact that he didn't know that he actually does own part of a lumber company that he actually did have income from. But anyway, good point, Don. Thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
The recent handover of power back to the Iraqis has got investors worried. They ask, what about our war profiteering? Will we still be able to privatize everything in sight? Darlings, everything is under control because everything is still under our control. Alawi has been a wonderful CIA asset for years. Ambassador John Negroponte cut his teeth working with death squads out of Honduras in the 80s, and 140,000 American troops are protecting our oil as we pump it out from under their soil. We won't let this business bonanza be ruined by the evils of accountability or democracy. So relax. We know what we're doing. I'm Zena Fogg for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaire!
We the people now face a fundamental choice. Take back our government or do nothing and become the victims of tyranny and empire.
That is the message in a revealing new book by Tom Hartman, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People takes a hard look at America's past, present, and future. you'll find out that the Patriot Act is not unique. In 1798, President John Adams pushed the Alien and Sedition Act through a Federalist Congress, enabling him to have his unpatriotic critics arrested and imprisoned, putting numerous opposition newspapers out of business. While a bit more subtle, Hartman says, this administration is likewise attempting to suppress any criticism, to eradicate any opposition. Progressive talk show host Janine Garofalo says, read this book for a jolt of illumination. We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
A nationwide survey asked kids what they want out of life, and the answers might surprise you. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The typical American child gets a lot of video games, clothes, and trips to the mall. But is that what they really want? An organization called the Center for a New American Dream put the question to kids across the United States. More than 2,000 responded to the survey with essays and artwork. Betsy Taylor compiled their answers in a book called What Kids Want That Money Can't Buy.
What kids really want is they want to be kids. They want an opportunity to slow down. It takes a lot more time because kids, like adults, are getting squeezed to always do more, perform, stay ahead of the pack. They feel they've got to get perfectly equipped for the future or they're going to be left behind, and they're tired.
Taylor says kids want more time with family and friends and more control over their lives.
Kids today have 25% less leisure time than they did just two decades ago. They have more homework, more programmed activities. School days are getting longer. PE has been eliminated in many places. The arts are being eliminated. There's kind of a culture in our society where youth have to get right to it, starting in kindergarten.
Taylor blames our more is better consumer culture for the growing pressure on kids. She says they're bombarded with commercials telling them that having more stuff makes life better. But Taylor says when children have an opportunity to talk about what they really want, they reveal a desire to slow things down and spend more time with family, friends, pets, and nature. Taylor urges parents to take their kids camping, go for a walk, or visit their cousins. She says parents might assume their kids would prefer TV or a trip to the mall, but that's not what kids really want. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I love leaves in the wind, pictures of my friend.
Speaking of leaves in the wind, you should see it here in Vermont. I'm looking out the window here at the Green Mountains and the People's Republic. Autumn is here. I'm telling you, it's the peak of fall foliage season. Home construction, single-family home building, fell 8.2% last month. That means for the year, home building has fallen 1.2%. George Bush going to try and tell you, don't worry, all's well. Ron in Tucson, Arizona on the line with us. Hey, Ron, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I've got a couple of issues with you real fast. In Nevada...
Yeah.
Okay, there's all types of voter fraud going on, and I want to know what the Democratic National Committee or what John Kerry's campaign wants to do about starting lawsuits. I can't believe that there's no lawsuits being filed on a national level against all these voter frauds, and I think the Democrats ought to be opening their pocketbooks to hire attorneys to fight all these things.
They are, Ron. They are. There are several thousand attorneys all across the United States who are working for the DNC right now. Plus, the voter fraud in Nevada and Oregon is also being looked into by the FBI at the moment.
Okay. The other issue I want to make an issue about is what we do if, God forbid, George Bush wins. What do we do from that point? How do we stop these judgeships from being appointed? What can we do? And, you know, since it's also a congressional year, what do we do if, God forbid, they get control of both houses? What can we, Republic, do?
Well, if they continue to control all four branches of the government, the three branches, but you know you can split the House and Senate into two. If they continue to control all of those, and Bush appoints three or four Supreme Court judges, I am very concerned, frankly, about the future of this country. And I think that the only thing that will prevent that is a lot of loud citizen action. And on November 2nd, November 3rd, those are the things that we'll be talking about here. But I don't want to get all hysterical in advance, you know.
Tom, why doesn't Kerry stand up and make an issue of what's going on in Nevada and Oregon and these places?
I think that they have to have the facts. They have to know that this isn't just one guy in an organization. Once there's any evidence at all that it's systemic, you can bet your bottom dollar on that they will absolutely raise hell. They'll take this from one end of the country to the other.
I really hope at the end of the election that he doesn't fold like Gore does. I hope we fight it. You know, one thing, Tom, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I'm hoping that he acts presidential, appoints a staff, and does a positive assumption.
I would like to see him create, like they do in England, a shadow government. You know, and appoint a shadow secretary of state and the whole bit. And I think it's a real possibility. Bottom line, Ron, despair is not an option. We have to get active. We have to remain active. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. John Kerry says President Bush has a January surprise plan to privatize Social Security should Bush win another term. Bush was quoted in New York Times Magazine telling his supporters privatizing Social Security will be high on his agenda. The Bush campaign denies it.
The recent recession has created a massive wealth gap between white families and black and Hispanics. The study, released on Monday by the Pew Hispanic Center, says that white households had a median net worth greater than $88,000 in 2002. That's 11 times more than Hispanics and 14 times more than blacks. Nearly one-third of black families and 26% of Hispanic families were in debt or had no assets. That's compared to 11% of white families. According to Robert Sudo, director of the center, accumulation of wealth allows low-income families to rise into the middle class. He added that Hispanics made some gains in terms of employment in lower paid and lower skilled areas. Blacks were hit hardest by job loss during the recession, finding themselves victims of last hired, first fired policies.
A German auto workers' strike stretches into its sixth day as union members at a GM Opel plant are refusing to accept plans to cut 12,000 jobs in Europe. Franco Biagiotti is an Opel employee.
We have no other choice, or rather, the colleagues have no other choice. Their backs are against the wall. You have to imagine, on Thursday, they were told, listen, next year your position will be gone. The job and the plant will be sold.
The plant's production of Astra compact cars and Zafira minivans was brought to a standstill, and automotive manufacturing giant General Motors is urging workers to call off their strike, saying compulsory layoffs are necessary to remain competitive. GM's European division hasn't made a profit in 4 years, losing $161 million in the first half of 2004.
The world's only unionized Walmart may soon see its doors closed. The world's biggest retailer is threatening to close its store in Jonquière, Quebec, if the employees do not accept its contract. Proposal. Walmart said delays in contract negotiations are making the store increasingly unprofitable. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union argues that's the company that caused delays by trying to usurp the employees' decision to unionize. The union says the company recently opened a second Walmart less than 30 miles from the Jonquière store, which could be drawing away some clients. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. One in four working families in the United States are considered low income or poor. That's according to an independent report. Included in that number is 20 million children. Using data from the 2002 census, the report found that 9.2 million families with at least one working adult and one child fall into the government's measure of low income. That means they earn less than the federal poverty level of less than $37,000. 2.5 million of those families earn less than $18,000 a year.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Maybe you're one of the 2 million Americans who've recently had their jobs offshore to India, Pakistan, and elsewhere. Or one of the millions more expected to have your job shipped abroad in the next few years. If so, don't worry, bucko, for a new growth industry has arisen that offers exciting job opportunities for you discarded Americans. You too could become an American accent and culture trainer. It seems that while such corporations as Citibank, Dell, GE, and Microsoft are eager to abandon the U.S. and move their telephone service jobs to low-wage workers abroad, these English-speaking foreign workers are, well, foreign. So their accents and cultural references can be jarring to U.S. customers placing orders or seeking help. Thus, offshoring companies are hiring Americans to teach foreign replacement workers to sound and behave like Americans. Yes, this means you could end up teaching the Indian or Pakistani or Russian who was given your job how to sound like you. Courses in American Culture 101 include U.S. history memorization, American slang, basic sports knowledge, and pop culture. Quick, what's the Lone Star State? Who are the Florida Marlins? Can you name one talent that Britney Spears has? What's a burrito? The lesson plans for these courses include having to watch episodes of Friends and screening such films as Bruce Almighty. As for accents, there are voice exercises for Indians, for example, to help them lower their natural high-pitched and clipped pronunciation of English. And if the exercises are not enough, the corporate call centers use technology to filter the telephone voices of the foreign service reps, making them sound lower than they are. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, it won't be long before the corporations train low-paid foreigners to teach American accents and culture to foreign workers. Then there'll be no need for American workers at all.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big, evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Since 1945, the world has seen a five-fold, 500% increase in the consumption of oil, a substantial chunk of that in the United States, although India and China are quickly catching up. Let's have a conversation about that today. Myron Ebell is the oversees all global warming and international environmental work at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI.org. Myron, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Pleased to have you on here. Now, the United States is roughly 4% of the world's population. We consumed last year about 26% of the world's total energy supply. I take it you think that that's just fine.
Well, yes, especially when you consider that we produced about 30% of the world's wealth last year.
And what percentage of the world's waste?
A lot less than our share, considering that we produce 30% of the world's wealth.
Okay.
Because we've got
a whole bunch of really, really rich people here, that means it's just fine for us to use up most of the world's oil?
No, I would put it slightly differently. Wealthy societies are the environmentally clean societies, so I think our goal should be to make places like China and India and Brazil wealthy societies. That's in our interest. But the fact is, we're not using up the world's resources. We're producing the world's wealth using things like petroleum and coal.
So if right now we have, the United States, more or less, say, 300 million people, the population of the planet, roughly 6.5 billion people, Western Europe, 350 million people also. So between us, Western Europe, Australia, Japan, maybe a billion people altogether, who are consuming oil at the rate that we are, you're suggesting that the other 5.5 billion people should be brought up to that same level of consumption. Where is that oil going to come from?
Well, I don't know that we're going to bring all of the world's people up to
but
that
you
level.
But you just said that we should all, we should raise everybody up to our economic level. Where's that?
Yes.
It's going to take four planet Earths to do that.
No, there's an awful lot of energy in the ground, and we haven't even begun to tap a lot of it yet. And I think through technological change, we'll not only be able to tap more of it, but we'll also find new energy sources in the coming generation. So I think our goal, yes, should be to try to raise everybody up to the levels of wealth and productivity of the United States. But it's obviously not going to be done in a day, although if you look at China, they're now the world's, second largest consumer of energy, and they're also, they're not certainly the world's second largest producer yet, but they're moving in that direction.
But they're also a billion people. They're larger than the combined population of the United States and Western Europe.
Yeah, well, I think if you add in the new countries that have joined the EU, you'll find a lot more than 350 million, but leaving that aside, I do think that we are not. You put this in terms that we're taking something away from them. We're not.
No, I didn't mean to imply that.
Wealth. It's the U.S. economy that pulls other economies of the world along.
Here's my concern. My concern is that we're behaving like heroin addicts, and that particularly the people who are espousing your point of view, who are saying that's just fine, are driving us down a road that I think is very, very dangerous. In 2001, we consumed in the United States on a daily basis 19 million barrels of oil. We produced only 8 million barrels of oil. So we had to import 11 million barrels of oil, or 53% of our needs. It's up now to about, we're consuming more or less, the latest statistic for 2003, around 22 million barrels per day. Our production is now below 8 million barrels per day. So our imports are increasing even greater. You've got a situation where one of the more notorious people on Earth in 1997, being interviewed by Peter Arnett from CNN, Osama bin Laden, was asked, of course this was before 9/11, was asked, what's your gripe with the United States? And he said, the price of oil should be much higher. Newt Gingrich quotes him as saying that it should be at $200 a barrel. I can't find where bin Laden actually said that, but bin Laden said to Peter Arnett that the price of oil is being artificially kept low because the United States is propping up a corrupt dictatorship in Saudi Arabia that's over-pumping, and, you know, in order to satisfy the gluttony and greed of the United States. And when Peter Arnett said, well, you know, what are you going to do about that? Bin Laden said, well, you'll see in the media, God willing. I mean, your mentality is leading to 9/11, isn't it?
No. There is a lot of oil in the world, and it is true that Saudi Arabia has an awful lot of it. But there's an awful lot in other places. For instance, Alberta, the province of Alberta in Canada, has a comparable amount of total energy to what Saudi Arabia has.
Yeah, but it's not easily accessible stuff. You can pump oil out of Saudi Arabia right now for around $12 a barrel. You can pump it out of Iraq right now for a buck and a half a barrel. The average production cost in the United States is around $13 and a half a barrel. If you're looking at tar sands out of Alberta, you're talking equivalent production costs of $50 to $60 a barrel.
Well, I dispute that because I know that it's being produced today and they're making money at it, and there are huge investments being made by a number of different companies in expanding that production. So,
well, let's say $25 to $30
is as high as you say.
Yeah, let's say $25 to $30 a barrel. Then it's substantial. It is to the point where it's really only become economical to produce in the last decade.
Well, what you're saying, Tom, really is that we should really put a lot more emphasis in this country on coal production, because the U.S. does have a huge amount of coal. We've got several hundred years' worth.
Now, what I'm saying, I agree with you on that, but what I'm saying is that we really face three options. We can either lower our living standards, and you know, George Herbert Walker Bush said the American lifestyle is not negotiable, although the average European consumes about a quarter the average energy that the average American does, and they don't seem to have a lower standard of living than we do. In fact, by most measures, it's higher. But nonetheless, we could, number one, lower our living standards. Number two, we could increase our efficiency in our use of alternatives. Or number three, we could grab somebody else's oil. And it certainly seems to me like this administration's policy has been to choose number three, grab somebody else's oil.
Well, I don't think those are the only options, but I want to go back. The European standard of living is nowhere near ours. Europe is really much more class divided than we are. There are an awful lot of people in Europe still in the so-called working class who live in 2 and 3 room flats. Many more of those in Europe than in the United States.
Myron Abel, have you ever lived in Europe?
Yes.
Yeah, so have I. Where did you live?
I lived in England.
Okay, I lived in Germany for a year. The level of frugality. I mean, here in the United States in the 1950s, the typical TV show. You remember? I don't know if you're old enough to remember Jackie Gleason or the old Lucy show. And you know, it was the cold water second floor, third floor walk up apartment. I mean, certainly there was. People lived a little more modestly in the United States in the 1950s than they do today, and we didn't have as many McMansions. But is that really the way that we should be measuring quality of life? I mean, in Western Europe, people have longer lifespans than we do. They have, you know, there's nobody who is uninsured. How should we simply measure it by the number of people who live in a house or an apartment?
No, I measure it according to people getting to do what they want to do and make the choices that they want to make and having the wherewithal to do it. And in this country, we're in a much better position than any country in Europe.
Do you think so? Even though one out of five working Americans is below the poverty level. You know, Franklin Roosevelt said, "A necessitous people are not a free people." How can you say when one out of five working people are living below the poverty level, where they really don't have choices, ultimately, that we're more free than in some of the Western European nations that have a much lower level of poverty than we do?
Well, first of all, just sociologically, I would dispute the second statement. There's much more poverty in Europe than there is in the United States. And there's generally, just on average, a much lower standard of living, and we've been gaining a lot faster on them. I mean, we're outpacing them every year now.
But we're sucking down the planet's oil to do it, and Osama bin Laden and his buddies are saying, "Hey, quit stealing our oil!" And then they send airplanes over and knock down our towers. But we say, "Oh no, we're going to keep on doing this because this is the American way." Come on.
Well, I think the answer to our petroleum problems, insofar as we have them, and I think the main problem is that the price of petroleum is too high today, is diversification of supply. And I think, you know, there are a lot of countries that have a lot of oil, and there are a lot of them are interested in producing more of it. And I think over time, you'll see that a smaller percentage of the world's petroleum is coming from the Near East and a higher percentage is coming from places like
You think the price of oil should be lower? I mean, the reality is that we are only capable in the United States of producing about 7.5 million barrels of oil a day. We're consuming over 20 million barrels of oil a day. And you want to increase the level of addiction that we have to other countries' oils?
Oh, but it's not an addiction. I mean, I drink coffee every day, but I'm not addicted to it.
Well, I'll tell you, if I turn off the electricity to your house, you'll have a much different experience than you will if I take away your coffee.
Well, I had that experience, and when we had a hurricane come through here, and they couldn't get the power on for 6 days. And I've got to say, I'm really tied. If you want to call providing affordable energy to Americans an addiction, I'm all for it. I think that's what our public policy should be devoted to doing, is providing access to affordable energy.
I agree, but why oil? I mean, other than, I'm assuming Competitive Enterprise Institute has some donors in the oil industry as the, you know.
Well, we have some in a number of industries, unfortunately not nearly enough to do the sorts of work we'd like to do. But leaving that aside, I think it doesn't really matter where we get our energy from, but if you look at the predictions of where we're going to get our energy from for the next 20 to 30 years, and I think those are the predictions that are reasonable to think have some basis. They're not just kind of pie in the sky like we're going to invent some new magical technology or something. The International Energy Agency over in Paris and our EIA, the Energy Information Administration here in this country, have remarkable...
Funded by who?
The EIA, Energy Information Administration, which is the Department of Energy.
I see.
They have remarkably similar forecasts for 30 years from now. They say the world's going to use about 60% more energy, and a higher percentage of it 30 years from now is going to come from fossil fuels than today. It's instead of 85%.
And yet, if you go to British Petroleum's website, and this is not Greenpeace, this is British Petroleum, BP.com. You go to their website, and they've got all these charts and tables and graphs there, and you can see the total known reserves of the world, the total estimated reserves of the world, the total current level of world consumption, the current increase of world consumption. I think right now they're projecting 2.3% per year. And if you simply do the math, you divide current consumption into known and estimated reserves, you come up with somewhere between 25 and 45 years worth of oil left on the earth. And you think we should be using this up faster?
Yeah, because those predictions have been made ever since the 1890s.
By wild-eyed fanatics. I'm talking about predictions by the oil industry.
No. In the 1930s, the Department of Interior said we'd run out of petroleum globally by 1940. The fact is that we've discovered a lot more than we've used in that period.
But our technology is better now, and we pretty much know what we're talking about.
Technical idea that doesn't mean how much oil there really is there that we can get.
Myron, we got to take a pause here, but we're talking with Myron Edel of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, oversees all global warming and international environmental work there. Myron, right after this break, we've got a couple callers too, if that's all right with you.
Great, thanks.
Okay, hang on. We'll be right back. 20 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program. You're in the middle of the real free speech zone.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on the clerical error.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We are talking with Myron Ebell. Ebell, excuse me. Is that right, Myron?
Whichever you like.
Okay. I'm
agreeable about something.
Yeah, well, I'd like to have it right. It's Myron Ebell, I believe. With the Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI.org, a conservative who doesn't believe we should conserve oil, right?
Right.
Okay. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, number 12, welcome to the program.
Did you get my email about the site for your new chat room?
Yeah. Haven't had a chance to get to it yet. Yeah.
Very good. Anyway, oil, how long have we been burning that stuff? That's more than 100-year-old technology. You think we could find another thing to combust? There's a guy here in town, his last name is Althaus, and he takes old Mercedes, let's say, like about 1985 vintage, and he runs them on vegetable oil. I really think it's when the powers that be in the corporations find a way to put a meter on the sun and charge you for it, then we're going to have solar energy.
Yeah.
That's the basis of the problem there.
Good point. You're breaking up, number 12. I'm going to drop you off, but good point. Are you opposed to solar energy, Myron?
No. I'm for all these new technologies. I just think that it's a mistake for the federal government to subsidize either them or the old technologies. We think that the marketplace and investors in the marketplace and consumers do a better job of sorting all these problems out there.
But, I hate to quote Osama bin Laden, but, as he points out, how can you say that there is a free market when you've got a Saudi dictatorship sitting on about a third of the planet's oil, or in the region that controls a third of the planet's oil, certainly Saudi sitting on 15 or 20% of the planet's oil, and they just basically pump at whatever arbitrary rate they decide to pump at, in collaboration with you know, the Bush crime family or whatever.
Well, I think they learned, you know, they're sort of the leading member of OPEC, the oil cartel. And what they do is they try to adjust their oil output so as to keep the price of oil up, but without it going out of sight, which is what...
Right, this is not a free market. This is a controlled... That's my point. This is a controlled market. Let's go to Walt in Crescent City, California. Maybe he has got a better question than I do here. Hey, Walt, what's up?
Well, the thing that I keep thinking about, what Myron is saying, is it's like a parent that has a child that's obese. The parent says, I refuse to put this child on the diet because he's eating the things he likes. He's like hamburgers and potato chips and on and on and on. You're destroying the child because you won't take control of his behavior. And it's the same thing with this oil business. They're destroying the environment. The environment is going to hell, and this guy wants to burn up half the oil in the world. That's insane.
Myron?
Thanks.
Well, I think the analogy is false. I said earlier we consume about 25% of the world's energy, and we produce about 30% of the world's wealth. A lot of people have looked at environmental quality, and the most interesting and the most detailed studies, the most in-depth studies, have been done over a period of time by the World Bank. They show a very clear correlation between wealth and environmental quality and human health. And
it's the wealthy societies that have good environments, forced societies to try to get rich enough so that they can afford to clean up their environment.
But Walt, that, you know, yes, and you look at those numbers, and when people hit a certain kind of essentially a middle class status, that things start to clean up. But having more billionaires doesn't mean that we're going to have a cleaner planet.
Yeah, but we've got people in middle incomes living in homes that are 3,000 and 4,000 square feet. And with the swimming pool and on and on and on, and they don't need that. Why should we sacrifice the world for our greed?
Well, greed is good, right, Myron?
Well, look, I don't live. I live in a with four children in a considerably smaller house built in 1940, and we have one car and we take the subway a lot. That's my choice. It seems to me that if I've got neighbors who have moved farther out into the suburbs and built a bigger house and have more cars, that's their choice.
Yeah. So if they want to be greedy, that's good.
Sure. No, they're not being greedy. They're being productive citizens who've earned a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's a bunch of crap.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. Myron, thanks so much for being with us. I appreciate it. I'll give you, we got about 10 seconds here if you want to make the last comment.
I just want to thank you, Tom, and I want to thank you for having such an honest and open interchange with somebody you disagree with. I think you do a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Myron Abel, he's with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI.org on the Internet. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. John Kerry says President Bush has a January surprise plan to privatize Social Security should Bush win another term. Bush was quoted in New York Times Magazine telling his supporters privatizing Social Security will be high on his agenda. The Bush campaign denies it.
The recent recession has created a massive wealth gap between white families and black and Hispanics. The study, released on Monday by the Pew Hispanic Center, says that white households had a median net worth greater than $88,000 in 2002. That's 11 times more than Hispanics and 14 times more than blacks. Nearly one-third of black families and 26% of Hispanic families were in debt or had no assets. That's compared to 11% of white families. According to Robert Sudo, director of the center, accumulation of wealth allows low-income families to rise into the middle class. He added that Hispanics made some gains in terms of employment in lower paid and lower skilled areas. Blacks were hit hardest by job loss during the recession, finding themselves victims of last hired, first fired policies.
A German auto workers' strike stretches into its sixth day as union members at a GM Opel plant are refusing to accept plans to cut 12,000 jobs in Europe. Franco Biagiotti is an Opel employee.
We have no other choice, or rather, the colleagues have no other choice. Their backs are against the wall. You have to imagine, on Thursday, they were told, listen, next year your position will be gone. The job and the plant will be sold.
The plant's production of Astra compact cars and Zafira minivans was brought to a standstill, and automotive manufacturing giant General Motors is urging workers to call off their strike, saying compulsory layoffs are necessary to remain competitive. GM's European division hasn't made a profit in 4 years, losing $161 million in the first half of 2004.
The world's only unionized Walmart may soon see its doors closed. The world's biggest retailer is threatening to close its store in Jonquière, Quebec, if the employees do not accept its contract proposal. Walmart said delays in contract negotiations are making the store increasingly unprofitable. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union argues that's the company that caused delays by trying to usurp the employees' decision to unionize. The union says the company recently opened a second Walmart less than 30 miles from the Jonquière store, which could be drawing away some clients. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. One in four working families in the United States are considered low-income or poor. That's according to an independent report. Included in that number is 20 million children. Using data from the 2002 census, the report found that 9.2 million families with at least one working adult and one child fall into the government's measure of low income. That means they earn less than the federal poverty level of less than $37,000. 2.5 million of those families earn less than $18,000 a year.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Yes, indeed. Tom Hartman here with you 27 minutes before the hour. Oh, come on. We're going to come back. We're going to get back to democracy in the United States. That's what we're going to get back to. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We've got a couple of callers on the line. And Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service, our erstwhile reporter in Washington, D.C. Ellen, so great to have you with us today.
Well, thank you so much. President Bush is in Florida around St. Petersburg. He said that he's basically traveling in the state. He reassured people on the flu vaccine, and he talked about Senator Kerry. He said that Senator Kerry calls for bigger and more intrusive government. I thought Bush had expanded the government more than any Democrat had ever thought of it.
Bush has expanded the government more than any president in history.
Right. Amazing. Then he talked about an ownership society and Social Security. Now, you know as well as I know that that ownership society was crafted by none other than Karen Hughes, if I've ever heard of Karen Hughes.
Oh, yeah, it means that them that own get to own society. It's like
you
the golden rule, you know.
Also, now, you wonder if this isn't coordinated because he wants a fourth term. Alan Greenspan this morning, well, he actually has a fourth term as chair, but then it runs out in 2 years.
No, Greenspan is just a right-wing ideologue, and he's going to do anything he can to support Bush because Bush is a right-wing. They're both extremists.
He said that rising household debt levels do not pose a debt to the economy, despite a recent analysis that essentially shows that the ratio of household debt to disposable income is an all-time high.
Yeah.
And he says these concerns cannot be readily dismissed. But he said, if home prices fall, we would have reason to be concerned about mortgage debt, but because prices are on the rise, we don't.
Did he point out that
how much the average family is in debt?
Yeah, but he didn't. I'll bet he didn't point out, because the statistic was only released this afternoon, that new home starts dropped by 8.2% in September, the last month that was reported.
The housing starts.
That's right. The slowdown has begun, and housing values are starting to fall. And you're going to see, and it's a bubble that's going to burst, and it's going to burst big time over the next year or two, and whoever is president next year is going to have one
huge mess on their hands as a result of Greenspan's driving interest rates down to historic lows, I mean, Great Depression-level lows, just to try and hype the economy so that his good buddy George can get elected, re-elected.
Now, I'm sure you've read about Scowcroft's comments to the Financial Times that the president was too unilateral in his foreign policy.
Yeah.
A lot of his friends are now saying, his spinmeisters are saying, well, the president's still... Scowcroft is still planning on voting for the president because he thinks John Kerry's policies would be worse. Now, if you believe that, I have a bridge in London to sell you.
Yeah. It's besides that, who cares who Scowcroft is going to vote for? I mean, this is the battle between George and his father that was so intense that he didn't allow his own father, who was president of the United States for 4 years and vice president for 8 years. Essentially ran the United States for 12 years, certainly the last couple of years of the Reagan administration as Reagan was gone, didn't even allow him to speak at the Republican National Convention. I mean, talk about payback.
Exactly. And also, very interesting, Kerry Edwards' campaign has two more ads. The first is a 9/11 widow saying that she would vote for Senator Kerry and why. And the second sets the ad, the record straight, as they say, on Iraq. It shows a video from Iraq when an Austrian narrator basically said, "We see it for ourselves, the mess in Iraq created by George Bush, kidnappings, Americans held hostage." And by the way, the director of CARE International, which is, is based in Georgia, was kidnapped today. She's British born, and she was kidnapped in Iraq.
Yeah, and that's one that's going. That could be a Jimmy Carter problem. I mean, because she's not a combatant. She's been there for 25 years. She's high profile. CARE is a United Nations agency. It's nonpartisan. It's not affiliated with any nation. We'll see what kind of impact it has. But,
and the Swift Boat folks are focusing on Florida and Ohio. They now have a $16 million ad campaign when all their expenditures are totaled, and they're going to spend, or they've already spent, but it hasn't already aired, $2.8 million for expanded buys in Ohio and Florida.
That's incredible. The Kerry campaign only has $12 million left between now and Election Day.
It is not a pretty picture.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, Ellen, thanks for the report.
You're welcome. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, great to hear from you. Keep up the good work. It's 22 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Who's perpetrating voter fraud in Ohio? Looks like Mr. Blackwell, the Republican, Ken Blackwell, doing the bidding of the Republican Party and the Bush-Cheney in trying to suppress the vote once again. Republicans have noticed over 800,000 new registrants in Ohio, says ACT Ohio State Director Steve Bouchard, and it scares the hell out of them, so now they're corrupting the electoral process to make sure those votes can't be counted. The oldest Republican trick in the book, if you can't win fair and square, cheat. We'll have more details on that as the story develops. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Paul in Santa Fe, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Great show.
Thank you.
I wonder if you could help me. I've got a Republican wing in my family, and over the weekend we watched Hijacking Catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
Great movie.
Yeah, I've seen it. I recommend it highly.
But the argument that I kept getting from my Republican brother-in-law was that you had a caller earlier that said the same thing, that the information was biased. He was discounting the doctor that was on earlier because they were biased, and I was wondering what that means. I'm biased towards the truth. I'm biased towards actual factual information, but saying that this information is biased somehow is supposed to discount its accuracy.
This is the great illness of our age, Paul. I mean, I mean that very seriously in terms of in my business, or not in the talk radio business, but in what used to be my business back when I used to be a reporter in the news business. It used to be before more or less the 1960s and 70s when the media consolidation first really started to pick up steam. It used to be that most communities would have multiple newspapers. Obviously multiple radio stations, sometimes multiple television stations, but in particular with regard to newspapers. And those newspapers would be very open about their bias, about their position. I mean, we know that the Wall Street Journal is very conservative, for example. We know that the New York Times is a little more liberal in terms of their editorial bias, their editorial page. But both of them really, I think, sincerely make an effort in their news pages to go right down the middle and to be unbiased. The problem is, in my opinion, it's impossible. Ain't no such thing. It's, you know, right. we're all human beings. Somebody has to make a decision which story goes on page one and which story goes on page three. And that story is going to reflect some sort of worldview, which you could call bias. And so, frankly, I'd like to see us go back to a time when people are just honest and upfront about what their bias is. And you can choose if you want to tune into the liberal network, the conservative network, or the network that tries to be both, or the socialist network, or the libertarian network, for that matter, or if you want to read newspapers, you know, all of the above. I mean, that's really how it was in the United States for the first 200 years. And I'm in favor of that. I think we need to go back to that. I think, and the reason why we have this mythos of impartiality is because of this massive corporate ownership of the media. The rationale that large corporations have used in buying up huge numbers of media properties is to say, well, we're not going to harm the public good. We're not going to harm the public discourse. We're not going to harm the heartbeat of democracy, which is the free and fair, the free and unfettered exchange of information and views, because we're going to be unbiased. And over just in the last generation, that has become a buzzword, and it's nonsense.
Well, the information doesn't seem to be a factor. It just seems to be, if you've got anything that disagrees with me, then you must be biased, the end.
Sure. Yeah, well, what they're saying basically is they're using the word bias in exchange for the word lie. And it's unfortunate because they're just wrong. I mean, you just say, hey, you know, that ain't the case. It's not
so. The information was there to be seen, it just seemed really frustrating that I couldn't carry the conversation beyond this bias that
was
supposed to be.
Well, that's their way of saying what they're really saying is they don't want to carry the conversation beyond that point.
Exactly.
And at that, you know, and some folks just, you know, hey, don't confuse me with the facts. My mind is made up. and frankly, Paul, you know, people on our side of the argument are just as guilty of that as people on the other side very often. I think all of us need to be working on all sides of the political discourse in America. I think this is what John Stewart did so brilliantly last Friday in Crossfire, pointing this out, that we all need to be a little more civil, and we need to be looking more at the issues and less at the personalities. And, you know, I just think it's important. Anyhow, thanks for the call. Yeah, we will. Go ahead.
Spend a little more time looking at the information and the facts, yeah.
Yeah, amen. Paul, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, David in Detroit, Michigan on the line. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, how are you? I just had a comment about your last guest about the oil and our consumption here in the States and in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I'd done a little bit of research on peak oil in particular.
Yeah.
And that's the concept that, you know, with every production curve, it follows a bell-shaped curve.
Yeah, I'm not only familiar with it, I wrote an entire book about it called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. Ancient sunlight being oil. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, I wasn't familiar with that. I have to look that up.
It's published by Random House, and it's available in 14 languages now. So it's
okay.
Yeah.
I'll definitely.
Pardon my bragging. Go ahead, David.
It's right. Okay. So you're familiar with M. King Hubbard and, Shell Oil Company.
Yep.
And you're familiar with Kenneth DeFaze over at Princeton, and Matthew Simmons, who's one of the largest investment bankers for the oil industry, $85 billion portfolio.
Yeah, so to your point, tight David, friend, your point.
Tight friends with the Bush. Well, what I'm saying, my point is that this is the main issue of the campaign. This is the main issue of the world, I think.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been brought up. It hasn't been addressed.
It's the main issue of the war as well.
Yeah, it's the main point of the war, exactly. And it's going to be the main point of so many other wars to follow if we don't begin to address it today.
Yeah, absolutely. We should have bumper stickers to say, "What if Iraq grew broccoli?"
Right.
You know.
Right. I mean, you know, the Chinese are burning oil like it's going out of style. Their quality of life, so to speak, is increasing in large numbers. And when they come to realize that they've joined the party too late, what's going to happen then? I mean, we have one of the largest military exercises off the coast of Hong Kong ever.
Oh, I know. I have said many, many times on this program that our biggest problem is going to be communist China, and the fact that they are our major competitor for oil. They are starting to flex their muscle around the world, and it, perhaps most ominously, they own, because of our United States trade deficit, because of the Walmartization of the United States, because we are buying hundreds of billions of dollars a year more worth of stuff from them than we are selling to them, and they are ending up with all kinds of American dollars every year, hundreds of billions of dollars that they don't have anything to do with. So what they do with them is they buy our debt, they buy our treasury bills. They own so much of our debt right now that if the communist Chinese, not the Taiwanese, were to suddenly start dumping our debt on the world market, it would bring this nation to its knees economically in 24 hours. It would be end of the game, buddy. We would have to declare a nuclear war to get out of the thing. It's a disaster scenario that would make the Great Depression look like a picnic. And the Chinese know this. They have talked out loud about this. And in the midst of this, we are still perpetuating our addiction to oil, and we're still perpetuating our addiction to debt. I mean, that's the Bush administration policies are not just running us into a ditch; they're running us over the edge of the Grand Canyon.
That's right. That's right. So. And then you couple the deficit and the rest of that with the money that they pulled out of each and every one of our super funds, the highways, the airports, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, to the point where each individual American, and this is according to a Senate session, published numbers, $440,000 worth of debt per each individual American in the United States.
Yeah, we are up to our eyeballs. You're absolutely right, David. Thanks for calling and pointing that out. We are up to our eyeballs in debt. Every time a new child is born, they are born, depending on whose numbers you use, with somewhere between $25,000 and $210,000 in debt. Poof, instant. And the two largest contributors to the American debt, we hadn't even reached a $1 trillion national debt until Ronald Reagan came into office. It was over $2.5 trillion by the time he left. And then Bill Clinton started paying it down, and then George W. Bush comes along, and now it's up to $7 trillion. The two largest contributors to the American debt, Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush, and both of them ran up more debt during their terms than all other American presidents combined. This is not patriotic. This is not democratic. This is not even conservative. This is nuts. Tony in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Tony, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. Just to comment on what you were saying earlier about the news sources being biased. Like you said, I have no problem with a news source being biased. I just would prefer they say it instead of calling themselves fair and balanced.
Well, I agree. And I think that they should be locally owned and responsive to the local community. The other problem I have is when a news source is biased and they own 40, 50, 60, 70 markets like Sinclair Broadcasting, and they have Mark Hyman on every day doing his overt rants, no opportunity for rebuttal, no opportunity for response, and not reflecting the concerns or values of the local community. That's a Stalinist type of media, and I'm opposed to it.
Yeah. Anyways, what I called in for was you talked earlier about George Bush expanding the presidency power more than any other president ever.
Yeah.
Just what were some of those things? I'd like to
look
that out.
The government spending. I mean, in terms of the power of the presidency, look at the Patriot Act and look at, the suspension of civil liberties in the United States. You can be arrested, held without trial. Trial in secret and even executed without any public discussion, number one. And number two, just look at public spending. It's just gone through the roof, larger than any other president. 10 minutes before the hour. Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.com. www.bushmedia.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Do you have a dust mask? Well, if you use a bagless vacuum and you're sensitive to dust, a leading consumer magazine products testing magazine warns you should wear a dust mask. But here's a better idea. Try my newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. It uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. Try emptying a bagless vacuum and see what happens. Dust gets all over your hands and face and back into the room and on the kitchen counter. And you get to breathe it in? I believe a vacuum should capture the dust, not your lungs. That's why with my Auric XL, the filter bags are self-sealing. What goes in the bag stays in the bag, even when you empty it. So try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Then if you still want a bagless vacuum, I'll send you a dust mask to wear.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. As the presidential election looms closer, Americans' prosperity has become a central campaign issue, and a new report by the Working Poor Families Project throws new light on a highly charged debate. More than one quarter of all U.S. workers are paid poverty wages, and 20 million children live in families that don't earn enough to meet basic needs. According to a shocking new report entitled Working Hard, Falling Short, Brandon Roberts is co-author of the publication.
9.2 million working families are low income. These are families that are struggling to make ends meet and to advance to the middle class.
Robert says there's a huge and growing disparity between America's low-income service labor force and businesses' demand for highly skilled workers. He says there needs to be a coordinated effort between states and the federal government on programs that help low-wage workers.
Across the country, we have a very uneven commitment from state to state in how we assist low-income, hard-working families to get ahead and to stay ahead. And, of course, our key recommendation is engender a national discussion and examination of how we can better utilize our resources and our public systems.
Robert suggests a minimum wage hike as a simple measure that could be taken to immediately lift some of the financial burden off the backs of working families.
One-third of these low-income working families have a parent without a high school degree. If you take a typical family of four with two working adults, if both of those workers were employed full-time year-round and earned the minimum wage, together their salary is going to equal $21,424. That's far short of what it takes for a family to be economically self-sufficient.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Voter suppression areas, efforts, voter fraud. Four different types of it happening in Ohio right now, already being revealed. In Florida, we've got three different issues. In Nevada, two. In Missouri, in Iowa, in Minnesota, in Michigan, and in Wisconsin. We'll get into those in more detail in the next hour of the program. 4 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mike in Michigan on the line. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Great show, Tom. What separates you from right-wing radio is you talk about issues rather than just some tirade of abuse. And in that respect, the trade deficit that we are currently running with China in a single year would allow them to buy all of the agricultural production of the entire United States of America.
That's mind-boggling, Mike.
And that's in a single year, and we've been running this trade deficit for probably decades at this point. But
yeah.
Another issue on the Bush campaign, it basically to believing them or your own lying eyes. And finally, an issue that I've never really heard discussed, and that is the IRS, we all feel, is an abusive institution. There's a fairly unanimous belief that if we could rid them, whether it was the flat tax or the sales tax or whatever, how about the sales tax where there's a more universal application to such items as real estate, stocks.
Yeah, Mike, you're breaking up. I'm sorry. We just can't hold it. But that's a longer discussion for a time when we've got more than just 2 minutes here. Brian in New Jersey on the line. Good points, though. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Always an honor. What exactly does China have to do in order to put us into this depression? And what's the best way for us to prevent this from happening? Well, why wouldn't they just...
All they have to do is they have to go out into the world market and start selling our debt at whatever price anybody is willing to pay. In other words, it's just dump it on the market. And what
that? Why wouldn't they?
They wouldn't because they don't want to create absolute total chaos and bring the United States to our knees. They are. I'm telling
you. They're being
kind
to us, basically.
That's right. They are holding this as a threat. This is a threat that they are holding over our heads right now. It's one of the reasons why they're getting most favored nation trade status. It's one of the reasons that we're being so kind to them. It's one of the reasons why George W. Bush, the defender of liberty, told the people of Taiwan that they could not have a ballot initiative on their own ballot in their own country that said that they want to declare themselves independent. I mean, that's what's going on, Brian. It's
hope that we don't turn into their China in effect, because I could see that happening.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's a very, very real possibility. Very scary stuff. It's the power that this administration and conservative economics via trade policy that has enriched the billionaires of Walmart and wiped out the middle class of America has put the vulnerability that it's created for the United States is absolutely horrific. And we have to do something about it. You can do it in the ballot box on November 2nd.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Critics say that when we consolidate the media into fewer and fewer hands, it threatens diversity. Nothing could be further from the truth. Every demographic has different consuming habits. With 500 channels, we'll have one shopping network for Elvis memorabilia and another for the dogs playing poker crowd. Something for everyone. In this spirit, we billionaires are buying up the airwaves. If you're on a road trip from Kennebunkport to Crawford, you can tune into Rush the whole trip down. Just think, the same country and soft rock stations everywhere you go. And what we leave off the dial, you're better off without, really. Aren't you glad someone's protecting you from polka music? You're welcome. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here comes the billionaire!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. John Kerry says President Bush has a January surprise plan to privatize Social Security should Bush win another term. Bush was quoted in New York Times Magazine telling his supporters privatizing Social Security will be high on his agenda. The Bush campaign denies it.
The recent recession has created a massive wealth gap between white families and black and Hispanics. The study, released on Monday by the Pew Hispanic Center, says that white households had a median net worth greater than $88,000 in 2002. That's 11 times more than Hispanics and 14 times more than blacks. Nearly one-third of black families and 26% of Hispanic families were in debt or had no assets. That's compared to 11% of white families. According to Robert Sudo, director of the center, accumulation of wealth allows low-income families to rise into the middle class. He added that Hispanics made some gains in terms of employment in lower paid and lower skilled areas. Blacks were hit hardest by job loss during the recession, finding themselves victims of last hired, first fired policies.
A German auto workers' strike stretches into its sixth day as union members at a GM Opel plant are refusing to accept plans to cut 12,000 jobs in Europe. Franco Biagiotti is an Opel employee.
We have no other choice, or rather, the colleagues have no other choice. Their backs are against the wall. You have to imagine, on Thursday, they were told, listen, next year your position will be gone. The job and the plant will be sold.
The plant's production of Astra compact cars and Zafira minivans was brought to a standstill, and automotive manufacturing giant General Motors is urging workers to call off their strike, saying compulsory layoffs are necessary to remain competitive. GM's European division hasn't made a profit in 4 years, losing $161 million in the first half of 2004.
The world's only unionized Walmart may soon see its doors closed. The world's biggest retailer is threatening to close its store in Jonquière, Quebec, if the employees do not accept its contract proposal. Walmart said delays in contract negotiations are making the store increasingly unprofitable. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union argues that's the company that caused delays by trying to usurp the employees' decision to unionize. The union says the company recently opened a second Walmart less than 30 miles from the Jonquière store, which could be drawing away some clients. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. One in four working families in the United States are considered low income or poor. That's according to an independent report. Included in that number is 20 million children. Using data from the 2002 census, the report found that 9.2 million families with at least one working adult and one child fall into the government's measure of low income. That means they earn less than the federal poverty level of less than $37,000. 2.5 million of those families earn less than $18,000 a year.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Walmart, we're told, is the epitome of free enterprise in America. Work hard, be innovative, achieve efficiencies, and your company will be rewarded with riches. Oh yes, one more thing. Be sure to load up on government subsidies along the way. Good Jobs First, a research center that studies the doling out of public money to corporations, reports that the sprawling of Walmart empire has been fueled by the steady injection of more than $1 billion from the pockets of us taxpayers, including taxes paid by local businesses that subsequently have been squeezed out of existence by Walmart's subsidized muscle. Digging into scattered, often hidden records of state and local governments, the center found 244 cases of giveaways, including construction grants, special tax breaks, and job training money. The average payout to a Walmart store was $2.8 million. Imagine being an independent pharmacy, hardware store, grocery, or other shop and having to compete with a multi-billion dollar giant that is then handed an extra $2.8 million tax-paid advantage over you. The actual subsidy is much larger, for the center was able to look at only a portion of the 2,900 Walmart stores. Also, the report covers only the direct development subsidies, not counting the huge wage subsidy it gets. Walmart pays at a poverty level and provides no health coverage for a majority of its workers, instead counting on food stamps, emergency rooms, and other publicly financed services to underwrite its workforce. Oh, tut-tut, sniffed a Walmart PR flack. Don't you know that in 10 years the company has collected more than $52 billion in sales taxes that help finance local governments? Well, tut-tut right back. That's not Walmart's money. So excuse us if we don't roll over in gratitude. This is Jim Hightower saying, to learn more and to help push for economic development policies that work for local folks, call Good Jobs First, 202-626-3780.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me. You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live today, 14 days to regime change. God willing. Let us... Now, oh, there I go. Okay, yeah, you're doing a Bush touch. You're mixing politics and religion. In fact, our quote for the day from Barry Goldwater. Yep, Barry Goldwater. Our quote for the day. This is from a speech he gave in 1981. Barry Goldwater said, our quote for the day, religious factions will go on imposing their will on others unless the decent people connected to them recognize that religion has no place in public policy. They must learn to make their views known without trying to make their views the only alternatives. Barry Goldwater, 1981, our quote for the day. In his speeches lately, George Bush has been extolling the wonders and virtues of the elections in Afghanistan. And frankly, I got to say, I tip my hat to him. Well, not so much to him, really, to the United Nations that helped put this thing together and to the coalition. I mean, you realize, of course, that there are French soldiers in Afghanistan. France has soldiers in Afghanistan. Yes, they do. You won't hear Bush admit it, but, you know. So, anyhow, I tip my hat to the coalition there and to the United Nations effort to bring about these elections. They have done an extraordinary job, and I think it's a wonderful thing. I'm not sure that... Well, that's a whole other discussion. In the midst of this, however, the state of elections here at home is suffering somewhat, shall we say. As the Center for American Progress reports, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, quote, this is from the Philadelphia newspaper, Republican operatives working to reelect President Bush in battleground Pennsylvania submitted last-minute requests in Philadelphia on Friday to relocate 63 polling places. They want to relocate them? Why do the Republican operatives want the polling places changed? Well, it turns out that of these 63 that they want changed, 53 of them are in political divisions where the population of white voters is less than 10%. All 63 are, again quoting the Philadelphia Inquirer, in political divisions where Democrats hold an overwhelming advantage among registered voters. You get this? The Republicans are going in and they say, let's go into the Democratic districts and move around the polls. That'll fix it. That'll confuse them. And then when they show up at the wrong poll, a polling place, if they're supposed to show up at another one, well, then they may be eligible for a provisional ballot, which may or may not get counted. We'll get to that in a minute, but Or they may show up and say, hey, I thought we were supposed to vote at the school here. There's nobody here. What should we do? Well, Matt Robb had some thoughts on why this was done, why all these polling places were being moved, and where they were being moved to. Turns out that they were proposing to move them out of black districts into white districts. Republican Alderman Matt Robb, this is a Republican in Philadelphia, challenged on the transparent attempt to make it difficult for more than 37,000, mostly African Americans, to vote, said that, and I quote, said that the polling places should be moved out of black areas into white areas, quote, because those polling places are in neighborhoods that he doesn't wish to visit. Now, again, quoting him, it's predominantly 100% black. I'm just not going in there to get a knife in my back, end quote. This white Republican guy. Hey, Ira, the monitor out there is too loud. I'm hearing an echo in my headphones. Anyhow, this white Republican guy says, you know, we got to crank down the number of polling places in black districts because he doesn't want to go into one of them. It's using racism as your excuse for voter suppression. It's like, if it wasn't so tragic for American democracy, if it wasn't such a sad day for the United States, it would be funny. In Nevada, a district judge in Nevada, Valerie Adair, has denied the Democratic Party's request to reopen voter registration of voters whose forms may have been destroyed by a Republican-backed organization. Despite testimony by former employee of the Republican-backed group Voters Outreach of America, who told local media that his organization paid only for Republican forms and tore up any Democratic registration forms, Adair claimed she did not want to open the floodgates to allow people not affected by the purported fraud to register. It's like a flood of registered voters. That's a terrible thing in Nevada. We can't have that. We can't have any floods of registered voters. No, we don't want too many voters. What are you talking about? It's a terrible thing. What, democracy? Well, yeah, it is about 5-1 Democrats being registered here. Therefore, it's a problem. Pardon me, I'm getting excited. She said the appropriate remedy was for those who believe they've been denied the right to vote to file a lawsuit. That's right. If you went to a government building and saw one of those little tables outside that said register to vote here, and it was Voter Outreach of America, funded by former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie's Republican National Committee, and you registered to vote outside that government building, thinking that you were registering at some completely nonpartisan place, and then you discovered when you show up at the polls that your name's not on the rolls because it turns out that they tore up your ballot because you said in the primaries that you would choose to vote in the Democratic primary, you should file a lawsuit. You should go out and take a few thousand dollars of your own money and hire a lawyer and sue who? Well, I'm not sure. This company has closed up shop and moved away, doesn't exist anymore. Maybe you could sue Ed Gillespie and get some of that $700,000 a year salary he was making from Enron before he went to work as head of the Republican National Committee. You think? Frankly, I doubt it. But you could try. It might cost you $30,000, $40,000 to do that. Of course, Republicans know everybody has that kind of money just laying around. And, you know, the ultimate kicker, you're not even going to know if they destroyed your voter registration form until you show up at the poll and they can't find your name. As happened to about 20,000 African Americans in Florida people who had no felony convictions, had committed no crimes other than the crime in Florida of voting while black, showed up at the polls only to discover that because somebody in Texas had a name that was similar to theirs, and they happened to live in a county that was mostly black, their name had been removed from the rolls by Jeb Bush and Kathleen Harris. Catherine Harris. Speaking of Jeb Bush, new evidence indicates Florida Governor Jeb Bush ignored advice to throw out a flawed felon voter list before it went out to county election officials, despite warnings from state officials. They're at it again, my friends. They're at it again right now. As we speak, they are doing it. A May 4th email revealed Governor Bush had been told to, quote, pull a plug, end quote, on the voter database by Department of State computer experts. The email said state election officials, quote, weren't comfortable with the felon matching program they've got, end quote, but added, get this, but added, the governor, the brother of the president, the brother of the resident of the White House, Jeb Bush, rejected their suggestion to pull the plug, so they're going live with it this weekend. This weekend, they're going to do it again. Despite efforts by election officials to keep the felon list private, news organizations, including the Miami Herald, found deep flaws in how the list was put together, including thousands of African-American voters who should have been on the list, who should not have been on this list of people who are not allowed to vote. They should have every right, every legal right to vote. Back in July, portions of the list were exposed. It was discovered that there were no Hispanic felons on the list, a lot of African-American felons on the list. Why? Well, because in southern Florida, most of the Hispanics are not from Mexico, they're from Cuba, and they tend to vote Republican, not Democratic. And, of course, the voting machines crashing early and crashing often. Meanwhile, citizens in Governor Bush's state began casting votes on Monday, and within an hour, problems cropped up. A Democratic state legislator in Palm Beach County said she wasn't given a complete ballot when she opted to use paper instead of the touchscreen machine. And in Orange County, the touchscreen systems briefly crashed, paralyzing voting in Orlando and its immediate suburbs. Meanwhile, voters in 9 of Broward County's 14 sites ran into computer-generated problems. What did the Republicans say? File a lawsuit if you don't like it. 1-866-889-8894. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Chris in Albuquerque, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind?
Actually, it's Abiquiu, way up north.
Oh, Abiquiu, that's right. Every time I look at that, I think Ira has typed in an abbreviation, and thanks for keeping. You're probably going to have to correct me a couple more times. I'm just okay.
Glad to do it.
Chris in Abiquiu.
A question. Speaking of lawsuits, on the Sinclair group forcing their affiliate stations to air this obvious propaganda piece, this obvious anti-Kerry propaganda,
this despicable lie-ridden slasher propaganda piece. Yes, continue.
Yeah. My question is, and I don't know if I'm right on this or not, but I do know that the broadcast airwaves do not belong to the Sinclair Group or any network. The broadcast airwaves in this country still belong to the people of the United States of America collectively.
Yes, and control over them is exercised by the Federal Communications Commission as guided by the elected representatives of the We the People. And at the moment, the five members of the FCC are, three of them are Republicans and two are Democrats, and therefore, nothing's going to happen.
Okay, well, my question is, really quickly, if they're pushing this forth as news for that very reason, if there is even a little bit of opinion involved in that broadcast, doesn't that open them to an enormous class action lawsuit?
I think so. Time will tell.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service.
Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Out of His Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. In the last hour, we had on a fellow from the American Enterprise, or the Competitive Enterprise Institute, rather, CEI. And, you know, you're kind of generic right-winger, conservative guy who was going on and on about how we need to consume more oil and make it cheaper and cheaper, and said, Europe doesn't have the poverty, or has a worse poverty problem than in the United States. And interestingly, in our chat room is a member from Norway, The screen name Vegtam, I don't know if you're a he or she, but in any case, welcome. And our Norwegian member in our chat, you can get to our chat room, by the way, by going to tomhartman.com and click live chat. Takes you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. Plug in an AOL or CompuServe screen name and password, and boom, you're in. And if you don't have one, you can sign up for one instantly. There's no charge, no credit cards, nothing like that. All you have to do is put in a valid email address, and that's just so that we can keep out we don't keep out Republicans. We actually encourage them, or conservatives, but keep out the spammers, you know, people who come in and want to get rich in your spare time stuff. Anyhow, our Norwegian member says, the poverty level in Norway, you are considered poor. There's about 3 to 5% of the Norwegians are considered poor, first of all. I pointed out to this guy that 1 out of 5 working families in the United States lives below the poverty line. In the United States, that's $14,400 for a family of four. In Norway, it's 3 to 5%. That's 1 out of 20 up to maybe 1 out of 30, something like that. And the poverty level in Norway is, for a family of four, $32,000 a year. If you make less than the U.S. equivalent of $32,000 a year, and that's after taxes, then you're considered poor in Norway. Just to set the record straight. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Paula in Ashland, Kentucky on the line. Hey, Paula, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm just really disgusted with this administration. They've got everybody, I mean, not everybody, but a lot of people buffaloed into thinking that people who are Democrats are immoral, and the things they are doing with, you know, they're, you know, of course they won't take the blame of what's happening in Nevada, people not being able to vote, but I just can't believe what's going on in America, and what, I mean, it's a replay of 2000.
Yeah. It's what it's reflecting, Paula, in my mind, is the classic mentality of the ends justify the means. And I think whenever any individually in our private lives, business-wise, family-wise, whatever, or particularly at the level of a nation, when we begin believing that the ends justify the means, then the means are wide open. I mean, that was, you know, the Nazis were trying to create a thousand years of peace. And many people in Germany actually believed that. But, you know, the means that they used was not a healthy one, shall we say. It was one of the, it was horrific.
Exactly. And I think that's what's happening today. I mean, it might be a little far-fetched, but, I mean, I have family that live in the southern part of the United States, and they go to church. And, you know, there's people in these churches preaching, you know, vote for Bush. I mean, what is up with, I don't understand that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
it's, well, there, first of all, Bush is shoveling money at churches as fast as he can with his army of compassionate warriors, the faith-based initiatives, which, you know, James Madison back in 1812 vetoed the first attempt by Congress to give money to churches to care for the poor, saying, you know, once we open this door, it'll never be closed again, and we'll be subject to the tyranny of the religious. You know, it's very clear, faith and religion have an important part in American life, but shouldn't be part of our government.
Exactly, and I'm really disappointed with the way things are going this election. I mean, I'm going to vote, and I'm voting for John Kerry, and I made my mind up a long time ago. I don't like the way things are going right now, and the way they began, and, you mean, I don't like the way they began in 2000 either. That was just a bad start for everybody.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was a national tragedy. It really and truly was, Paula. Paula, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I hope you also, in addition to voting, that you get a few other people to the polls as well.
I am working hard.
Good on you. Thanks for the call, and good luck, and God bless. That's important work you're doing. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program, where despair is not an option. Get active. Get active. You can do it. We can take our country back.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. John Kerry says President Bush has a January surprise plan to privatize Social Security should Bush win another term. Bush was quoted in New York Times Magazine telling his supporters privatizing Social Security will be high on his agenda. The Bush campaign denies it.
The recent recession has created a massive wealth gap between white families and black and Hispanics. The study, released on Monday by the Pew Hispanic Center, says that white households had a median net worth greater than $88,000 in 2002. That's 11 times more than Hispanics and 14 times more than blacks. Nearly one-third of black families and 26% of Hispanic families were in debt or had no assets. That's compared to 11% of white families. According to Robert Sudo, director of the center, accumulation of wealth allows low-income families to rise into the middle class. He added that Hispanics made some gains in terms of employment in lower paid and lower skilled areas. Blacks were hit hardest by job loss during the recession, finding themselves victims of last hired, first fired policies.
A German auto workers' strike stretches into its sixth day as union members at a GM Opel plant are refusing to accept plans to cut 12,000 jobs in Europe. Franco Biagiotti is an Opel employee.
We have no other choice, or rather, the colleagues have no other choice. Their backs are against the wall. You have to imagine, on Thursday, they were told, listen, next year your position will be gone. The job and the plant will be sold.
The plant's production of Astra compact cars and Zafira minivans was brought to a standstill, and automotive manufacturing giant General Motors is urging workers to call off their strike, saying compulsory layoffs are necessary to remain competitive. GM's European division hasn't made a profit in 4 years, losing $161 million in the first half of 2004.
The world's only unionized Walmart may soon see its doors closed. The world's biggest retailer is threatening to close its store in Jonquière, Quebec, if the employees do not accept its contract proposal. Walmart said delays in contract negotiations are making the store increasingly unprofitable. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union argues that's the company that caused delays by trying to usurp the employees' decision to unionize. The union says the company recently opened a second Walmart less than 30 miles from the Jonquière store, which could be drawing away some clients. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. One in four working families in the United States are considered low income or poor. That's according to an independent report. Included in that number is 20 million children. Using data from the 2002 census, the report found that 9.2 million families with at least one working adult and one child fall into the government's measure of low income. That means they earn less than the federal poverty level of less than $37,000. 2.5 million of those families earn less than $18,000 a year.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it's tit for tat, but heck, you know all that. So when George number one brought in the big guns and chased me out of Kuwait, tried to set me straight, I arranged a little hit on that Texas twit. Well, it didn't quite work.
It's the Osama song again. Yes, welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Discussing solutions and not false promises. What a refreshing thing, eh? I want to go through how the vote is being suppressed in five different states here. We've got some startling information. It's that the voter fraud has already begun, and oddly, it all seems to be happening on one side of the ticket. We'll get to that in just a minute, though. First, we have 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and Jeff in Denver, Colorado on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi. Before I mention the voters, the election situation, I'd like to just comment something on the Norway versus U.S. poverty rate.
Right.
Notice also that you say after taxes. Well, the Norwegians had their health care taken out of their taxes, so the U.S. family still has to pay for the health care and other things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my jaw dropped when that guy from the Competitive Enterprise Institute was going on about, they have more poverty in Europe than we do here. And I'm like, and I didn't want to get into it with him because we were talking about oil, not poverty. But if you're in poverty in Europe, you can still go to the doctor. If you're in poverty in the United States, you are in deep trouble.
There's a much greater difference than just the first numbers reveal.
Yeah.
Anyway, about voting, it's interesting to note that these, quote, liberal judges, such as the Supreme Court and this Nevada judge, tend to err toward voter suppression and voter disenfranchisement rather than, and they err that they will disenfranchise voters rather than face a bureaucratic inconvenience.
Yeah, these are not liberal judges, Jeff.
Yes, but they keep on talking like judges are liberal.
Well, a little more than half of the federal judiciary now was put in during the Reagan and Bush years, during those 12 years. I mean, it's really pretty startling, the percentage of federal judges that are, quote, conservative, end quote. Or, yeah. You know, and actually including Nixon. I mean, some of them are getting pretty old now, but...
Another thing is, it's interesting to note here, Denver, you know, and Colorado is now considered a swing state. While going around the city, it's interesting to note you see almost no Bush-Cheney signs, even when you see Republican signs in the yard, where Kerry Edwards signs are all over. It's probably about 60-to-1 ratio, as far as we can see.
Now, see, this is the thing. This is what gives me hope. Even, you know, because the polls, the polls that show Bush up. I mean, this time last year, more or less, you know, about 2 weeks before the elections, George Bush was showing about 6 points ahead of Al Gore in the polls, and yet Bush lost by 500,000 votes. Al Gore got more votes than any other candidate for president in the history of the United States. 500,000 votes is not a small number. You know, so the polls were very wrong, and it looks like the reason that they were wrong was threefold. Number one, they didn't poll newly registered voters, and in the last election and in this election, most of the newly registered voters are Democrats, or people who are left leaning, let's say Democrats, Greens, Independents on the liberal side. Secondly, they don't poll people who don't have people who have cell phones because they're not listed telephone numbers, and many young voters, people under 25, their primary phone is a cell phone. Two of my three kids, their primary phone are cell phones. And number three, they're heavily sampling Republicans. I mean, the Gallup poll, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but my recollection is that they were sampling about 38% Republicans, about 32% Democrats, whereas, you know, which reflected voting patterns perhaps 15, 18, 20 years ago, but now it's 50-50. In fact, it's shifting in favor of Democrats. And so I think these polls are nonsense.
And in some cases, Gallup was sampling Republicans in the 40 percentile, whereas sampling Democrats in the lower 30 percentile.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you've got better, your numbers, I'm sure, are more accurate than mine.
It varies from each one, but right after Republican convention, they had, I think, Republicans were around 46%. Democrats around 33 or something like that.
Yeah, and so, you know, if you ask more Republicans than you do Democrats who they're going to vote for president, surprise, surprise, you discover that looks like there's going to be more people voting for Bush than for Kerry. But the other thing that gives me hope, Jeff, the other thing that encourages me so much is the online polling. After the debates and things, all the online polls are so very heavily weighted for Kerry. Now, I don't for a minute believe that means that most people who are online actually support Kerry. I think that there probably is a, you know, a 50-50 more or less, say plus or minus 5 or 10 points. But we're talking about, you know, 80-20 on the polls. And I think what that shows is that the Democratic base is wild and furious. So they are really wound up and they are really energized, whereas the Republican base, outside of a very small fringe of Alan Keyes anti-abortion fanatics, I mean, people who are just absolute single-issue fanatics who will not rest until any woman who gets an abortion is strapped down in the death chamber with a needle in her arm and put to death, or any doctor who would presume to perform an abortion, outside of that small number of absolute fanatics, by and large, I don't think the Republican base is energized. In fact, if anything, I think the Republican base is demoralized.
I know many people who are Republicans who have switched their votes now or are apologetic, and very few fanatical Republicans now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, the only ones that are fanatical are the multimillionaires and the billionaires, the ones who make up the Bush administration.
And I know no one who has switched from the Democrats to Bush.
Yeah, well, maybe there's somebody out there. If anybody, and thanks, Jeff, for the call. I appreciate it. If anybody listening to the sound of my voice has switched from, have voted for Al Gore 3.5 years, 4 years ago, and is going to vote for George Bush, please Call us now and tell us why. We would love to know. And I promise I'll be nice to you. 1-866-889-8894. Somehow I have a feeling that phone is not going to ring. At least it's not going to ring with somebody saying that. Yeah, if you want to talk about anything else, you're welcome to call also. Our lines are open, 1-866-889-8894. Let's get back to the stuff on what's going on with these states. In Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, Republican National Committee Chairman and former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie and crew visited Columbus, Ohio today to talk about voting issues. However, Americans Coming Together notes he glossed over his party's record of voter suppression both in Ohio and across the country. Let's take a look at what some of these. This is, you know, Catherine Harris rides again, right? In Ohio, we're looking at the activities of Mr. Blackwell, Mr. Ken Blackwell, the Republican party of the Republican Party, of the Bush-Cheney campaign, and also I believe he's, what, Secretary of State? Whatever he is, he's in charge of the campaign. He's in charge of the elections. First, he had the 80-pound paper rule. If you register to vote on anything other than 80-pound paper, he wasn't going to accept your registration, even though the registration forms being passed out by the Secretary of State's office were not on 80-pound paper. And particularly those, of course, being used by all the groups, all the get-out-the-vote groups, were not on 80-pound paper. Is like really stiff paper. It's like what postcards are made out of. And 20-pound paper is 16 to 20-pound paper is the typical weight of typing paper, copy paper, stuff like that. Number two, no provisional ballots counted. The Help American Vote Act of 2002 had a provision that was designed specifically for people who move. You know, every year in the United States, about 15-17, as my recollection is 17% back in the years when I used to do a lot of direct mail consulting work. I think it's 17% of any list goes bad in a year. That's the percentage of Americans who move every year. And so they said, you know, if you show up at a different polling place than you're registered to, than you're supposed to show up at, but you are registered to vote, you get what's called a provisional ballot, which means you can vote, and that ballot will get mailed over to the place where you're supposed to vote, and it'll get counted there. Or somebody will check the list and make sure that you're, and they'll count it wherever it is. So anyhow, he says, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to allow it. You've got to show up at the. See, these are all voter suppression efforts. It's and here's where, you know, this comes from. It's the guy in Michigan, State Representative John Papageorge in Michigan. He said. Excuse me. He said, if we don't suppress the Detroit vote, we're going to have a tough time in this election. Right. Suppress the vote is the name of the game for the Republicans this year. No provisional ballots to be counted. He doesn't want this. Blackwell even went to the courts to deny those who showed up at the wrong precinct but in the right county to have the right to a provisional ballot. This is ludicrous. The provisional ballot rule was set up precisely for those who have moved since the last election or whose polling locations have changed. He says he's going to take it all the way to the Supreme Court. That's Ohio. Hang on just a minute. We'll get to a few other states. First, let's take a phone call here. Frankie in, is it Paintsfield, Kentucky, Frankie?
Yes.
Hey, Frankie, welcome to the program.
I'm glad to have you on the air. Good to hear both sides.
Thank you.
I'm a what you might call a radio talk show junkie.
Okay. Me too.
That's what I get.
Well, I guess I'm a pusher then. Okay, so what's up, Frankie?
Well, I got a question. There's a... two gentlemen, I'm looking for their names, and I haven't heard much said about it. Congressmen or senators that put a bill before, like last week or something, about the draft?
Yeah, that was Charlie Rangel.
Charlie Rangel.
Yeah, Charlie Rangel was the United States, member of the United States House of Representatives who put that bill forward about a year and a half ago, actually. And his point in putting the bill forward was that... no members of Congress's kids are over there in Iraq, and, you know, if Bush is so in favor of the war, why don't his daughters join up, blah-de-blah-de-blah. And it was a protest. I mean, everybody knew the thing was going to go down in flames. Rangel didn't even vote for his own bill when it finally came up.
So, okay. It was, I couldn't remember the name of the gentleman that did it.
Yeah, no, it was Charlie Rangel, the congressman from Harlem.
Okay. And I got a curiosity question.
Sure.
Okay. I live in a divided house, if you know what I'm talking about when I talk about politics.
Yep.
It makes it rough come this time of the year, every 4 years. But what my question is, you know, whether you're conservative or liberal or you're way left or way right, I think if you're conservative and liberal, there's nothing wrong with you. If you're way left and way right, then you got problems. That's the way I see things.
Okay.
Okay? Now, the question I got is, why should anybody be voting against somebody?
Well, if somebody in political office does things that you believe are destructive, are really destructive in some way, destructive to the environment, destructive to your interests, destructive to the nation, causing the deaths of people, running the country into debt, don't you think it's appropriate to remove that person from office? And really the only place to do that is the ballot box.
Okay. Now, you explained it in a different manner. But if you're going to vote against somebody, why shouldn't you find a reason to vote for the other person?
Oh, I agree. It's always much better to have a positive option.
Well, that's my point is, you know, if I'm going to vote against John Kerry, I should have to be able to find,
right.
Not for anybody else.
Yep.
I should be able to find something positive to be voting for that person.
Yeah.
Rather than, I don't want this person in office or I want this person out of office.
Yeah, and you know, Frankie, one of the things you've identified is why negative advertising works the way it does. Negative advertising does not increase votes for the guy who's running the ads. What it does is it suppresses votes. It causes people to say, to heck with it, they're all bums, I'm just not going to vote. That's the goal of negative advertising.
Negative ads, you don't know who's telling the truth.
I know. But the goal of negative advertising generally is to suppress the vote. It's an unfortunate reality in American politics. It's a tragedy, frankly, in my opinion, in American politics. But it's not something we're going to get. You know, it's not going to go away. But it gets right to the issue that you're raising, which is that wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody had somebody to vote for instead of just somebody to vote against. And this is where I think that instant runoff voting. Are you familiar with instant runoff voting, Frankie?
No.
Okay. Instant runoff voting is called IRV is the abbreviation for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually in about 230 cities now they've got it. San Francisco is the last big city to take it. It's how they do it in Australia. The whole nation does it. And when you go in to vote, you're given a ballot and you number them. So you'd say, okay, my number one, you may say your number one choice is... let's say that there was a libertarian candidate, somebody who's very conservative, but he's not George Bush. And so,
as in, like right now, we've got three because Nader's hitting enough states with enough percentage to actually be on the ballot.
Yeah. So, but I know. But let's say that you're a conservative, for example, but you're not happy with Bush, so you'd vote for the libertarian candidate number one, and then number two, you'd vote for George Bush, and then number three, maybe Nader, and number four, Kerry, something like that. And then what happens is they count up the votes, and anybody who's number one candidate didn't get, if nobody got a majority, if nobody got over 50%, then all the number one candidates who were at the very bottom, came in dead last, they count their second choice instead. So your second choice, so then your vote becomes a vote for Bush. But you actually had an opportunity to vote for somebody, and it gets registered as that. I'm sure I'm not explaining this super well.
Yeah, you are.
Oh, okay. To use my example, I mean, you know, for example, in the last election, I would have made my first choice Ralph Nader, my second choice Al Gore, and Nader obviously didn't get enough votes to be a serious contender. So they would have counted. So once that was obvious, then they would have counted my Gore vote. And similarly, there were people who thought Pat Buchanan would be better than George W. Bush, and so they could have voted for Pat Buchanan, but then they made Bush their second choice, and so their vote would have rolled over. And what it does is it expands democracy. It expands the number of candidates that we can have. It's an easy way to do it here in the United States. And it's called instant runoff voting, and I encourage you to start promoting it. It's something that we need.
That would do, I'll give you the example. The one thing that I dislike in our voting system, we all vote for our local representatives, correct?
Yes, sir.
I mean, by names, of course, our parties pick them locally who they want to run, if those people want to run.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have more of a choice there, in a sense, than we do for president.
Broadly, yeah.
Well, broadly, because, don't get me wrong, the national parties pick the president.
Yeah, by and large, it seems. Yeah.
And we just get to choose between the two.
Yeah. Frankie, we're out of time here. You can make a quick point here in 10 seconds.
Well, quick point is I just wish people would vote for somebody instead of against somebody. If you've got good things to vote for, then vote for it.
I agree with you. Well said. Frankie, thank you much. I appreciate that wisdom. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. telling the truths that multinational corporations would rather you didn't know.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. And if you own one, they advise you to wear a dust mask. I would never put the Oric name on a bagless vacuum. They're filthy. My hypoallergenic Oric XL uses triple-walled, disposable filter bags. They hold four times more than the leading brand of bagless vacuums. What goes in the Oric bag stays in the bag, including bacteria and viruses. Empty a bagless vacuum, and the dust goes right back into the room you've just cleaned. Is this sanitary? Oric cleans the air as it vacuums the floor. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. It's the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. George Bush predicted his tax cuts would create an average of 300,000 new jobs per month, but the latest numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics are out, and only 96,000 payroll jobs were created in September. And, according to the Economic Policy Institute, that's well below the pace of job creation earlier this year. Lee Price, research director with the EPI, says at least 150,000 new jobs would need to be created per month just to keep up with population growth.
We've got the numbers to expect from the Bush tax cuts. That was 306,000 jobs a month from mid-2003 to the end of 2004. So the job growth we've been getting falls far short of those benchmarks.
Manufacturing jobs fell by 18,000, and EPI economist Jared Bernstein says the report reveals a slower-growing labor force with an employment decline of over 200,000 in this month's household survey.
Private sector jobs in the service sector, private sector jobs were up 72,000, but 33,000 of those were in temporary help, and that job pays well below average and signals a continuing sign of employers' cautious hiring practices.
Up from last month, long-term unemployment of 6 months or more reached 22% in September.
This signals that many potential job seekers are avoiding job searchers in what's a pretty weak labor environment. But most importantly, since these people who are not in the labor market are not counted among the unemployed, it tells us that 5.4% unemployment rate paints too rosy a picture of just how tight the labor market is.
Since October 2002, more than one-fifth of unemployed workers have been without a job for at least half a year, the largest and longest stretch since 1948. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Turn on the light.
Well, let's turn a light on what's going on here in Florida, Duval County. The supervisor of elections refuses to add more than the current single early voting site, miles from most of the majority black precincts. Orange County, with a comparable amount of registered voters, largely white, has 9 vote sites. Duval, mostly black, only one. The media has reported law enforcement officers in Florida investigating so-called absentee ballot fraud have been visiting the homes of elderly African Americans in Orlando to intimidate voters. Jeb Bush says he will not be stopped. He's going to continue this practice right up until November 2nd, sending police officers into black people's homes to tell them that they are being investigated. They are investigating the potential voter fraud. Sort of a subtle way of saying, don't you dare show up at the ballots. In Palm Beach County, Florida, a pre-election test of electronic voting machines crashed the computer server that tabulates data from the touchscreen machines. In Nevada, the Associated Press reports hundreds of voter registration forms have been intentionally discarded or destroyed by a private company hired by former Enron lobbyist and now Republican National Committee Chairman Ed Gillespie to sign people up to vote. In Missouri, the Republican Party is trying to suppress the vote by claiming voter fraud by Democrats. But they're not making any specific allegations. They're saying, the Democrats are engaging in voter fraud. Look out. But there is no complaint, no specific complaint. But they're trying to, you know, cause people to say, it's all fixed. Screw it. I'm not going to show up. In Iowa, the state Republican Party has paid for robocalls. This is where machines call you up with a recorded voice, discouraging voters from voting absentee. In fact, Republicans are funding in Iowa robocalls telling voters to rip up their absentee ballots. All these voter suppression efforts. In Minnesota, the Republican SOS ran out of voter, Secretary of State's office, ran out of voter registration forms, posted flyers warning of possible terrorism on Election Day, and held a press conference warning potential voters of, quote, fragrant homicide, it's got to be flagrant, homicide bombers. It's like, you know, look out, there's going to be a terrorist attacks on Election Day. In Minnesota, the Republicans are telling the voters this. And in Michigan, of course, Republican State Senator, State Representative John Papa George says, if we don't suppress the vote, we're going to have a tough time in this election. In Wisconsin, the same thing, 260,000 additional ballots. They're refusing. On it goes. Thanks to Louise for a marvelous job producing today's program. Thanks to Ira Gravatt for engineering it. Thanks to Shelby LaPree for streaming us around the planet. Brad for our music. Mike Toth and Ben Birch. Jay for our music. The folks in our chat room. And to you. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This.